Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Well, Tom, I think Cody Rhodes tonight delivered the best moment for him so far in the hype for his WrestleMania main event. What do you think?
I thought there were a lot of sound bites that we'll hear in the package that plays before the match, which, you know, there's value in that. I think my main takeaway was, oh, why is he so mad all of a sudden? And sure, it's been building for a while and it's all coming out now, but it almost seems to me, and I've been on Cody's side this whole time, so I'm not trying to nitpick, but it almost seemed to me like his demeanor was somebody who had finally lost their cool after a troll on Twitter had been making comments at them all day. and he's responding on national television about wearing a suit when we didn't ask you about that, buddy. I don't know who you're worried about, but yeah, no, ultimately I thought it was, again, effective in the sense that there will be bullet points taken from it that will be in that video package that ends up in the on the pre-show as like the last minute sell. And in particular, I liked the "you need to acknowledge me" quote.
Was he responding all day on social media or all weekend to a troll? Like, is that actually a thing that happened?
No, I would not.
Oh, well, because that's. I mean, I could totally see that happening. That certainly seems to be a theme with wrestlers these days, getting caught up in what should be by them framed as a rando troll who then derails their entire life and career by causing them to say things online that they shouldn't or giving attention to things they shouldn't. So I thought maybe I missed something there. And not that Cody isn't sometimes fodder for such things. But, yeah, I thought this was the lead – you know, kind of alpha babyface promo he needed. I don't think his comeback to Reigns last, you know, everyone's talking about John Cena and Austin Theory and, you know, how, you know, Cena devoured Austin Theory and they even kind of played into that tonight, which I'm sure we'll get into. I thought, you know, Cody didn't have the best comeback to Roman when Roman was staring at him in the ring. And this almost seemed like kind of Cody going, all right, I got something in me. It took me a little time to get it, you know, get it figured out, but I want to restate my mission and do so with passion. I just thought the facial expressions, the camera work, the tone, the delivery was so strong. And, you know, the suit thing is interesting because, yeah, like when he brought that up, I was like, is that, do you want to draw attention to that? And then if you give a reason, are you in danger of people mocking that as the justification for always wearing a suit? I would say that with Cody, self-awareness doesn't seem like his strength when it comes to how he comes across to certain fans. And this was, in a way, a moment of self-awareness or a realization, or someone planted the seed with him that, you know, we need you to kind of be a wrestler of the people, a man of the people. And the suit might be off-putting. And then he came up with the idea of framing it as, you know, that it's not because he thinks he's somebody, but because he wants to be somebody. Did that work for you, drawing attention to that? I mean, I know you said, you know, nobody asked, but if you are going to bring it up, is that a way to kind of sort of frame why he is so formal and carries himself like a star? Because he, you know, it's like they say, dress for the job you want.
Oh, well, that's a good way to put it. It definitely felt like a response to something that wasn't already in the question, but I wonder if, and maybe I'm reaching, but I wonder if it wasn't similar to when he, and I believe this was on one of the premium post shows as opposed to on Raw or SmackDown, but when he explained why he points at the WrestleMania sign. It's not just because he's told to, it's because this really is the pinnacle of the business and it is a big deal. And when he does explain that thing where, if he does it without an explanation, like wearing the fancy suit, it seems like he feels like he's better than us, or he's just going along with a system that maybe we don't subscribe to. When he gives that explanation, I think it does ground him a bit more. Sure. I don't know. I mean, I didn't really think much of it other than, boy, somebody said something to him about a suit that got under his skin. So I am reaching a bit for an answer there. It didn't do much for me personally, but I don't think it detracted from Cody's journey or characterization.
What would you like to see? What would you have liked to have seen so far different? And what do you think there's still time to do, including next week on Raw, Reigns showing up with Paul Heyman with a masterful promo also, by the way, saying Cody's got a choice. And I thought Heyman did a great job explaining what Cody making it personal means, which is Roman is willing to see Cody as a challenger, and he accepts and respects that. But if he makes it personal, it changes the complexion of how Reigns will approach the match. And he said Cody next week has that choice to acknowledge him or make it personal. So I like the framing of that. So kind of we know that's coming up in the future. What do you want to see with that and other things in the next couple of weeks of the final hype on the road to the Cody Reigns match?
You know, the nitpicking the Heyman promo would be like, you know, turning away the one not so great serving of caviar at the 5-star Michelin restaurant. Most of this show, like the Heyman promo, to me felt like an intermediate half step that overall leaves me with almost everything they did tonight, that just leaves me hoping, like, okay, they've planned, with 2 weeks left, they've planned to peak at the right time, right? Because we didn't get as much development as I personally was hoping for tonight. My favorite thing about that Heyman promo, though, is that, of course, Heyman was the one that was making it personal all along. And now that Cody has finally given into that, he's like, whoa, you shouldn't be making it personal. So that's fantastic. But I'll tell you what, I already feel like Cody Roman is one of, if not the biggest match that you can put on at WrestleMania, which is what you should aim for. I already feel like Cody is right for the role, win or lose, and I'm still not decided either way. I could talk myself into it either way. There are great reasons to do either one. I think last time we spoke, I was maybe slightly leaning Cody, and tonight, if I had to choose, I'm leaning slightly Roman. It's just there are great reasons either way. So I'm already sold on who Cody is and what the story is, but what I have been looking for, and there were more breadcrumbs leading in this direction tonight, and I'm glad that it does seem that it is going to be what they do here, that unlike the clean break that it seemed like we were going to have between the Cody and Sammy storylines, the conversation has continued there a little bit. And where they need to get to, and I feel, again, intermediate half steps, but I feel they did do some more of them tonight, where they need to get to is making it seem like Cody, Sammy, and KO are... Sure, they're wrestling on different nights of WrestleMania, they're wrestling in separate matches, but they are, in effect, a team that is going into WrestleMania as a united front against the Bloodline, because each of them trying to do it individually hasn't worked to this point. Granted, Cody hasn't taken his first physical swing in that regard, but particularly in Sammy and KO's, it seems like it would be a very, very important ingredient here to have Cody be the mediator, be the reason why he just says, hey, look what happened when you two weren't working together, get together. So rather than Sammy and KO doing that themselves, Cody should be the one who brings them together. So he's a part of that story. That's what I'm hoping to see. I mean, I hope next week, because by the week after, it'll be very last minute.
All right, very good. Well, we could talk more about the Cody Roman Reigns situation, the Heyman promo, and everything else on Raw as we progress here. But let's pause and let's introduce ourselves in the show and let people know how they can participate in our live stream here. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, March 13th, 2023. And I'm Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and the website pwtorch.com, and the host of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Shows and Wade Keller Podcasts. Tomorrow, by the way, on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net will join me for our Tuesday flagship edition. Hope you'll download that show on Tuesday night. And in the meantime, send emails with questions and comments for the show to WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. But before we get to that, we've got tonight's post show following Raw, and my guest is Tom Staupe from PW Torch, various contributions to PW Torch over the years, including podcasts. And Tom, it's great to have you back in the co-host here.
Yeah, thanks, Wade. Of course, my focus is my YouTube channel that I told myself I would not, for years, I told myself I would not plug on these shows. And then I finally got to a point where I was like, why the heck not? I put a lot of work into it. So
exactly.
Speedway Video on YouTube is where most of my focus goes, and I've been doing that only just a few months longer than I've been contributing to the Torch. But when I'm not doing that, I'm talking about NXT, whether it's 8 years back on Saturdays on VIP with Kelly Wells, or whether it's once a month on Bonus Point talking about developmental talents, and two people that I talk about quite frequently on that show. Two of my favorites to talk about on that show were taping matches for Main Event tonight. So if anyone calls in who was at the show, I'll be curious if they got there early enough to watch either of those.
We do have some notes from our on-site correspondent, Effie, who is in attendance. We're hoping that they have a chance to give us a call, too. So we'll be on the lookout for that. We just don't have it quite confirmed if it'll just be email or a call, but maybe we'll get some details regarding that. The on-site correspondent aside, everybody is welcome to call the show who's live streaming our show right now. We'd love to hear from you. Our phone number is 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That'll flag you on the switchboard. That lets us know that you aren't just calling in to listen, but you want to participate. That's 347-215-8558. You can also email us, if that's easier, at the aforementioned email address, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. Let's keep rolling here with our reaction to Raw by starting with a caller quick here. We'll go to area code 240. You are up first. Go ahead and state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, Wade, this is LaMarcus from D.C.
LaMarcus, good to hear from you. What do you think of Raw tonight? What's on your mind?
I thought it was it was Raw. It was an okay show. I want to call it to talk – to just bring up Cody Rhodes. I don't feel that he should be Roman at WrestleMania because this – I feel like the storyline still seems like more of the Bloodline storyline and not necessarily Cody Rhodes storyline. And I feel like it kind of makes sense if you think about it. Of all the people that Roman Reigns has beat, and I know Cody keeps saying finish the story, but the story is currently Roman's story. It's not Cody's story. And I feel like, I know it's kind of built up big, but I feel like this more of Cody's more of a speed bump on Roman. In Roman's title reign. Not saying it's going to be like an asterisk or something. Going to look on Wikipedia, all the different title defenses. Just going to be, Cody's just going to be another title. Just another win for Roman. But at the same time, I do feel that Cody would be the best way to split the title. So I could see Cody, his whole, I want to say holier-than-thou attitude that he'll say that I want the WWE championship and I'll relinquish the Universal Championship because the WWE Championship is one that I always wanted, although he did say he wanted to be the Universal Champion tonight. And also, as far as he's mentioning his suit, he dressed that way because he wants to be somebody. And my thing is, the person he's trying to be, is it a heel? Because I feel like with WWE, usually heels are the ones that wear suits. A face usually doesn't wear a suit unless it's like a celebration, or I think Batista's the only like face I can think of that usually wears a suit when he's a babyface and champion. So and even looking at Cody, I'm thinking like, what is your character? Are you like a 1940s politician, or are you a pastor? A reverend or something, because that's what I see when I see Cody. And I don't know if you want to talk about that. I have another topic after that.
Yeah. So we'll respond to that. Cody is genuinely a very formal person. He wears his suit like every chance he gets. So it's not really like a pasted on gimmick. It's his authentic self. Now that doesn't mean your authentic self is always ideal for the character you're playing on television. Oftentimes the best characters are amplifications of a slice of who you really are. And that's where you find the most success, because I think fans can kind of sniff out a phony and they connect with something that feels genuine. Cody is a genuinely formal person. That's kind of where the whole grooming tip shtick came from during that short span in his previous WWE stint, where he's giving grooming tips to men. They've been trying to figure out how to take Cody, who has a distinct personality, and market him either as a babyface or a heel. The suit made sense in an AEW context publicly as him being an EVP. In WWE, I guess it could be sneaking up on people, you know, like, why is he so formal? Why is he wearing a suit all the time? Addressing it tonight, you know, some, like you said, Tom, maybe some people weren't thinking about it, but maybe other people are like, what's up with the suit? And Cody talked about it tonight. I don't know if it was a greatest answer, because I think people would think you won the Royal Rumble. You're the son of Dusty. You're a former EVP and essentially a co-founder of AEW. You've promoted a successful indie show. You've traveled the world and you're a known name. What do you mean? You had a reality show on a major cable network. What do you mean you want to be somebody? I probably would have done something different. I would have said something different if I were Cody in terms of why he wears a suit. And I would have underlined the idea that, you know, he is kind of a formal person and show kind of a self-awareness that, you know, some people kind of look at him funny, but that's just how he is. And I'd have to kind of think it through more how to frame it if he felt he needed to address it. But it isn't him, you know, I can understand LaMarcus is like sort of wondering what is the point of this and what is he trying to be? And that's kind of where I go to, maybe Cody needs to say like, this is kind of who he is, but do so almost in like a self-deprecating way, where it's like, I know this is sort of a quirk and some people kind of look at me funny, but I'm unlike a lot of people who are most comfortable in, you know, sweatpants and a t-shirt. I just, this is kind of my, where I'm most comfortable, wearing a suit and be a little more real. That said, I thought it worked tonight. And I really liked overall Cody promo and drawing attention to the suit and saying he wants to be a somebody, I think worked well enough, even if, like I said, I might have done something different with it. Tom, your thoughts on what I just said and also the other points LaMarcus made.
I like your idea, and I like LaMarcus's perspective on it. It's funny, I always forget what the movie is called, but the Air Jordan movie written by Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, the trailer played during Raw, and my partner and I had a conversation about the actors and what we like about them, and we agreed that we prefer Ben Affleck in his comedic roles. And this is the part in the story where I realize everybody's like, what is he talking about? Did he hear Wade's question? we agreed.
How did you read my mind, Tom? I'm totally kidding.
We agreed that we prefer Ben Affleck's comedic roles because he tends to play self-deprecating characters. So there's my long way of extrapolating why I like your idea. I think with Cody, even though he, you know, like LaMarcus was saying, he naturally presents as a heel, and even though I'm not as in tune with that program, I remember that being a major talking point around, especially the latter days of his run in AEW. I think it was natural to bring him back as a babyface. It fit, you know, it would have been like a Becky repeat, just going so hard against the grain to try to get people to boo him in that return and leaning in to what Cody brings to the table so much, made that reestablishment so effective, even though it was basically just like 3 months of matches against Seth Rollins. And then he had to go away for a while. So this is only his second feud in WWE since his return, as you phrased it in your report, Wade, this era of WWE. Good phrasing there. Lest I compliment you too much here. And it's still just, it's so, so fresh. And I say all that to say, you know, they're going with the grain here, and it's effective for now. And if Cody does win the title, Although, like I indicated earlier, LaMarcus, you ask me tomorrow, I may feel differently. Tonight, I am leaning more toward Roman because, you know, the title reign is just so hot right now. I feel like Roman should probably hold it for another year, turn babyface, hold it for another year, and then the only reason he ends up dropping it, you know, of course it'll have to be to the right person, but the only reason he ends up dropping it is because he's moving on to a movie career after gradually becoming more and more part-time, I guess. But anyway, I said all that to say that they are going with the Cody grain right now, but I would not be surprised if within the span of a year or less, we're looking at top heel Cody, because and I know that he was so resistant to that when he had more creative control, but LaMarcus is right. All the ingredients are there for him to just be a fantastic heel, and he does already present that way. And maybe my creative mind just misfires when I think of it, but when I do think of a Cody title reign, I don't know where that goes. I don't see it being very long-lived. I feel like maybe it's just because I haven't seen it, and maybe when I do see it, I'll change my mind. But I feel like the money is in the chase, and if you're going to do something different with Cody, it's going to get stale if he does not go with what feels like it would be more natural for him. And when I think of you mentioned Dashing Cody, and there were different incarnations of that. Even Stardust, even the much maligned Stardust, every version of Cody Rhodes that I looked at back in 2012, 2013, 2014, whenever that, you know, that era when they were trying to find how to present him in on the mid-card, every version of him that I looked at and saw potential in, because he was one of the top people when, you know, I stopped watching for quite a while, and when I came back and I tried to pick out, like, who do I think has the most potential here? He was in my top five. Every version of him was a heel. And these were wildly different characters. Every single one was heel. And I thought he brought a lot to each one. Each one is a completely different conversation, but that's just his natural leaning. So, yeah, I would not be surprised if that's where they go in relatively short order.
Tonight, Cody's promo felt like a politician who was ahead in the polls for months and then suddenly wasn't and had to really turn it up. And I say that not – I don't want to say that I have any inside knowledge of – and I don't seek out inside knowledge of what a finish of a big match is going to be. I feel that – compromises my ability to even evaluate what happens. I don't want to know the climax of a movie that I'm about to review. I just want to watch the movie like the viewers are going to. So that said, this came across as Cody's got it, got the match. He's going to win. He's going to be champion. And then suddenly maybe there was some talk, well, maybe we shouldn't do that for a lot of the reasons you said, Tom, and maybe the feeling that Cody was not showing he was ready yet to be that centerpiece act that Vince McMahon wanted him to be and decided he could be when, you know, Cody left AEW. This was an inspired, fired up Cody. And I liked this version of him. He seemed hungry. He seemed not taking anything for granted. I thought the body language, the expressions, moving around the ring, standing on the ring apron, shaking hands with fans after, I just thought this came across as somebody I could imagine being in that centerpiece babyface spot, but I don't disagree long-term, whatever long-term means in for a guy in his late 30s. But, you know, longer-term, I think there's a great heel run in him, and that's when the suit wearing can really come into play and other things that cause fans to boo him. But I thought this was the most likable that Cody's been. And that's not to say he's been unlikable, but like where I think people are like, I relate to this guy. He's fired up and he's got this his reasons for why he wants to do what he wants to do. And he's willing to stand up to what Roman and Heyman have been doing to try to play mind games with him. So this worked for me. But I am concerned about the drop off after he wins the title, if he does, over Roman. It was kind of like the letdown after Sting beat Ric Flair back in 1990, and everyone looked around going, who's Sting going to wrestle now? And, you know, was it Ric Flair who made Sting? And it seemed, you know, as world title ready as he was, and it turned out, yeah, it kind of was Ric Flair. I mean, Sting had his part, and it was exciting covering him at the beginning of his career because he was such a breath of fresh air and energy and charisma and athleticism. But yeah, once the bell rang and he had the main event, it was this huge letdown from Ric Flair at his peak. There is that concern that Roman is so hot as a lead character, centerpiece of act, that if Cody beats him and Cody starts having the headline events and the bell rings, can, you know, Cody against Solo or Cody against Gunther or Cody against Karrion, or I'm trying to think like, you know, who the heels would be. I don't know. You know, I mean, that's a big question mark with him. But if we look at what happened tonight, I think this was a step in the right direction. And I feel better now about Cody if the plan is for him to beat Roman because of the fiery, charismatic, confident delivery of his promo tonight. But there are some long-term issues with him, and he ran into that in AEW too. I'll throw back to LaMarcus.
You know, I still remember peeling that Howard Dean bumper sticker off the back of my 2003 Dodge Neon.
Oh, man.
I figured you would appreciate that one.
I recall that moment.
Well, yes. I probably then went and watched a Ben Affleck comedy.
LaMarcus, back to you for any follow-up on the Cody topic, or like you said, you had another topic too, whichever you want to do.
Cody wearing suits is fine. It's a type of suit for me. It's like,
oh, interesting. Okay.
I appreciate a good Sunday best suit, but he comes like a 3-4 piece suit with a pocket watch with a chain and everything. It's just kind of a lot. But also with the Cody and Roman, with Roman being gone so much, I hope that this makes up for the, like, with the WrestleMania promo packages. Like, maybe they have Roman, you know, at the American Samoa, you know, at the Island Revolution, sorry, and doing some kind of promo or something. Because I always think with Roman, I think with MJF, when every time MJF comes back on TV, he's in better physical shape, but that's not really the case with Roman. But so I just hope when Roman being gone, there's some kind of like going on with the promo and everything. It's as far as the promo is being viewed for WrestleMania, and that's not a question, just a statement. But and also, I do hope that at some point they have a promo because, you know, again, with Cody saying, you know, he's doing this for the dream and stuff like that. Although he hasn't said it this week and everything. I hope that Roman or Heyman, you know, tells Cody that, well, you know, you already tell the story because, you know, Roman's dad was a wrestler. He didn't become champion, but Roman did. The Rock dad was a wrestler. He didn't become world champion, but his son did. Randy same way and stuff. So it's like you saying all this stuff, but you know you're fighting for something. I mean, also I'm not a parent, but. It's not like he says, I think, you know, as a parent, you would tell your child, no, don't do this for me, do it for yourself, that kind of stuff. No disrespect to Dusty, but it's just the way Cody comes across. It just doesn't work for me. And I was going to leave on with, I've been hearing a lot just about, you know, how you feel about Bianca Belair's, how she comes to the ring and everything. And I just have to say, I disagree. Way, I agree with you, what you said about Liv, because I do feel like they kind of specialize her a lot. But I feel like with Bianca, it's not the same because, well, for one, she's like the, as far as champions go, she's the least revealing champion they have probably behind Bayley or tied with Bayley. And also, and I know the way she like skips and everything. I mean, you know, Daniel Bryan skipped to the ring, but doing it, yes, chant and stuff. Mickey James skipped to the ring. I mentioned that she doesn't seem like she's, you know, coming to sport, but, you know, we're in a world where, you know, you have a guy walking to the ring with a lantern and stuff, so stuff like that. But also, and even like, you know, Bianca blowing the kids or, you know, smacking her butt. It always seemed like she was doing that more of like smack her butt, like kiss my butt haters, or even like blowing a kiss, like either like hello or like blowing a kiss to her opponent. Like, no, also the haters, not like anything like, I don't know, degrading or any or demeaning. I think the word you said was demeaning.
Yeah,
I think you may be letting Kyle from Baltimore get to you. I know he doesn't really care for Bianca that much, but.
critique of Bianca's ring entrance isn't that it's overly sexualized. I think it's juvenile. I think it's cartoonish. I don't think it's grounded in who she really is. That, you know, I talk about Cody bonding with fans because it seems like what's that?
She's a face. I mean, she's a face, so of course it comes off cartoony. And I feel like Bianca's more for kids. She's not more for like, I won't say adult entertainment, but the way she presents, she is more like kid friendly with her than anything to me. Yeah,
and I'm not particularly. I don't think Bianca should be catering to kids. During a ring entrance tonight, I noticed they cut to girls in the crowd like cheering her and singing along, and it almost seemed like you know, a deliberate way to say, hey, this ring entrance is for them, as you're bringing up, LaMarcus. I think Bianca, and this just might come from me having higher expectations for her than others do. I think coming out to the ring to this paste, kind of pasted on smile, twirling a ponytail like it's the funnest, cleverest, most novel thing ever, and skipping, like I say, like a 12-year-old girl would do when no one's watching on a sidewalk. I think that's beneath a woman in her 30s who's as good of an athlete and who comes across, I think, with so much more gravitas when she's not in that mode during mainstream interviews. I think she has megastar potential, and I think her ring entrance defines her down as sort of a mid-card filly, like not serious athlete that's aimed at, you know, middle school girls. And that's my take on it. I think she would be a bigger star if her ring entrance seemed like it was had broader appeal and didn't feel so, yeah, just it just doesn't seem to fit her. It feels like it's a gimmick meant to micro-target an audience. And I think an alteration of that and something that feels more real and grounded would lead to her also, I think, being better on promos and leaning less on some of the stuff she did as a heel in NXT and some of the things that just come across as, you know, you pull the string on the doll and you let go and it repeats lines that are just recorded. Some of her promos don't lean on that stuff as much, and I think those are her better promos. But I want to be clear. I think Liv's ring entrance I dislike for different reasons than Bianca's. Tom, I want to get your thoughts on this too. I've been a critic of Bianca's ring entrance. I've also been a critic of her leaning on some catchphrases and the EST stuff. And also just in general, keeping some of the aspects of her character that she did in NXT when she was trying to be a heel and get booze and bringing them over without really recontextualizing them while she was a role model and a baby face.
Yeah, and you and I have talked about it quite a bit because it's been a longstanding issue. And there's been at least one time where it felt more like one of those situations, John Cena during his heyday, when he should feel like he's in more of a blood feud, or he should feel like he really got his ass handed to him the prior night at the pay-per-view or whatever it was. And he just makes the same John Cena entrance he always does. He says the same, you know, same stuff that he always said. And it was just like, oh, I guess all that didn't really mean as much. So there was at least one time we've talked about it where I leaned back a little bit more because what you were saying sounded right. But I do still feel that in Bianca's case, while, yes, absolutely everything that she does was more effective when she was a heel in NXT, and having been in those crowds personally, I know that although she transitioned face toward the end of her NXT run, which I was quite critical of on the Daily Cast at the time, she always got a lot of heat from the crowd. And like during her undefeated run, the crowd was genuinely mad that she just kept on winning and she had so much confidence. And that's where the smack in her butt and blowing the kisses and coming out flaunting her strength and whipping her braid around, it really, really worked. As a conquering babyface, while it's not as effective, I really do, and I may not even be the best person to, you know, the white male admiring what a black female brings to the table in this particular regard, but seeing a strong black woman like her as a role model to children and not just young black girls, but in particular, since society puts fewer of them up on this pedestal that Bianca is on, I think seeing her as the unflappable confidence that she exudes is really important to see on a consistent basis. And that's one of the main things that you want to see from her. I don't make the Liv Morgan comparison intentionally here. Just coincidentally, we did see a young girl who was, you know, she considers Liv Morgan to be her hero, apparently, and she was just uncontrollably sobbing when Liv lost a couple of weeks ago on SmackDown. Great cutaway to the crowd, and you know, I say great cutaway. It did kind of take me out of the moment because I immediately thought, well, they'll probably bring her backstage and let her meet Liv. And sure enough, that ended up on social media later and warmed a bunch of hearts, I'm sure. But just one example there with another name we were discussing as to how important, how invested people can be in these heroes. And, you know, any given time that you go to see them, you do want to see the main thing that they bring to the table, whether or not the segment or segments they are involved in end up changing that story as it goes along. So I think in this particular case, while other characters on the show maybe you can do different things with more often, Bianca is one that you want that consistency from, and particularly with the prancing or skipping, whatever you want to call it, and the braid twirling. Like twirling seems like a little girly word, or however you want to phrase it. But her braid is her main thing, you know, next to her strength. And I don't know, I guess whatever you want to pick, the fact that she makes her own gear or whatever it is, her braid really, really is the thing that stands out. It's a thing in the big CG graphic or AR graphic. And throughout her music, you hear the sound effect of her braid swooping through the air. So it just creating that visual rather than forgetting about it entirely, especially because although there are times where they've gone to it a little bit more, for the most part on the main roster, while she used the braid a lot in NXT, for the most part on the main roster, they've been much more careful about when they break it out. For when she's actually going to use it or when it's going to be used against her. And I say that on a night when, you know, Chelsea Green was the one tugging at it for a segment that ultimately didn't really go much of anywhere and was pretty much a photocopy of several segments that we've seen over past weeks. But yeah, I think overall big picture, you do want to accentuate the braid as well. And I can't think of too many other ways to do that than swooshing it around in the air.
Yeah, I think first of all, I'm not against her being confident and being a role model. I just want to be clear. There's not some false choice being made between what she does and being meek and not being a role model. I'm arguing the opposite. I think doing this rote ring entrance of, you know, like I described, skipping with this exaggerated smile and twirling a ponytail, it just feels like that's limiting her. I think she can be a role model to 12-year-old girls all around the world with a ring entrance that doesn't feel that doesn't come across as something that was, you know, that was put through some marketing department deciding, you know, what will be her thing that she does. I'm against that in general, where people don't seem like they're authentic. And if her personality and her mainstream media interviews matched her ring entrance, I'd be like, okay, lean into it. But there's something more there than this persona taps into. And I feel like the braid and the ring entrance are actually have gotten to a point that she should have outgrown it by now. I think her braid shouldn't be the main thing that's marketed. I think the, having a really, really long braid should be something that somebody who doesn't have anything else going for them leans on as their shtick. I think she can be much more than that, but that's my opinion. And obviously there's a range of opinions. I know I'm not alone on this, but I also know that there isn't, there aren't people with different, differing opinions on it too. But yeah, if it was my call, I'd have her more grounded and more grown up. And I think that's the way to be a role model for 12-year-old girls more than kind of patronizing them, which I think this ring entrance does. All right, LaMarcus, anything else you want to bring up?
Well, I agree with pretty much everything Tom said. Because, I mean, last year, Bianca, I don't everything clicks to me. I get it. Although I do agree that she does need, like, say a character change, either go heel or something like that. But as far as her braid, it's part of her identity. She does use as a weapon, and I would rather have her braid than, you know, the regular, you know, hair, flowing hair like most of the other women have. I think that's everything. This is my second time calling in. The first time I called was the night Bailey debuted on the main roster. And
wow.
I called the line.
Welcome
back. I called the line. Yeah, thank you. I called the line and I said if you needed an on-air correspondent, I can do it. And you said that no, you already have one, so you didn't need it. So just say that's why it took me so long to call again. So it took me that long to get over that embarrassment. But I do try to call, especially for the Dynamite shows, but because I want to rant about MJF. But it's funny, the past, I say 2 months, pretty much everything I want to rant about, he corrected the episode I want to call in. So it just got to the point where it wasn't a point to call in because there wasn't anything to rant about concerning MJF. But I will try to call, at least for the Dynamite show. Thanks for taking the call, mate. Yeah, I was going to say that all your shows are pretty much on my playlist if I'm, you know, going to the gym, running errands or whatever. So you always just keep me updating, just keep me going as far as, you know, motivating and just getting through the day. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you calling up, and I never – ever have a problem with anyone calling up if they disagree with a point of view I have, especially one that I've expressed as much as my discontent with Bianca. Hopefully we don't have to wait as long to hear from you again, LaMarcus.
Yeah, it was a really good phone call, LaMarcus. Really good topics. I hope we hear from you again, especially if Bianca ever does to her ponytail what Bailey ended up doing to her Bailey buddies, you'd better call in that night.
Tom, do you think Bianca's had a successful last 12 months since she, you know, was elevated to a new level? Has her last year been as good as you expected it to be, or maybe as you think it ought to have been? And that's part of my argument too. Is I want to see growth. I want to see dimensions to somebody in her position. Like, what she's doing to me is upper mid card. This is my gimmick. This is the lane I'm in, and I'm going to stick with it. And I think when you get to main event level, there's growth, there's change, there's expansion, there's layers, there's nuance. And in the ring, on the mic, and yes, the ring entrance feels like it's just been, you know, kind of rinse and repeat.
Yeah, I definitely get the essence of what you're saying. And, boy, I mean, she had the I'll call it a WrestleMania moment with Sasha a couple of years ago, and then she had the amazing WrestleMania match with Becky last year. I've gone back and watched that a couple times. It's just incredible, and I mean, it's difficult to argue that it has not been a downward trajectory since then. Gradually downward, but to the point now where creative doesn't even have a storyline for her. What we've seen with Bianca versus Asuka is just they go out to the ring, They look at each other, and Corey Graves says, that's the WrestleMania match. And then they do the same thing the following week. That's all it is. And, you know, last time we were on, I said that it was when they had set up that Becky and Lita were going to challenge for the Women's Tag Championships. And I said, this is just a stepping stone to get Becky and Bayley in the Raw Women's Championship match. And the reason I said that is because if you kept those two storylines separate, you have two cold storylines. And you could have at least put them together and had one lukewarm one. But on the subject of Bianca, while I remain a fan of hers and a proponent of hers, and I love what she brings to the table, and I do agree with you that she has megastar potential, I did expect her trajectory to continue upward from last year's WrestleMania.
Yeah. All right, very, very good. Let's bring our on-site correspondent to the show. Effie, welcome to the program.
Hey, what's up, Wade? Long time listener, first time caller.
Well, thank you for calling, and thanks for taking time to talk to us after attending Raw tonight.
Oh, of course. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. So let's just get a sense of the overall vibe in the building. Did it feel like a hot show from start to finish and a hot product and the wrestlers were over? Was there an ebb and flow? Did it feel – I don't know how many WWE shows you've attended, but how did it compare if you have attended other ones to those?
Yeah, I've been to probably on like the upwards, maybe like 100 shows. I went to like 6-7 Manias in a row from like New York 30 to like maybe like WrestleMania 36. So I've been to a whole bunch of different shows all the weekends, everything. So I'm pretty familiar with all the shows. I'm pretty familiar with all your questions too, so I'm going to have them already in my head already.
awesome.
Yeah. So it was pretty good. For the first hour, I felt like it was pretty jam-packed. I think the crowd was even shocked too. And I'm pretty up on the dirt sheets and stuff like that. And I didn't know Edge was coming. So I think that was a big shock for even like the casual fans there. So that was definitely a big surprise hearing Edge's music to start the show. And just a crap back to what you guys were just saying about Bianca, that's when I called in, I heard that. And I definitely agree with you guys. Now I'm a 30-year-old, Latino male, I'm Colombian. So I came with my two friends. And, they are they're murdered as well. And I think we agree. We're saying the same thing. We're like, they're fans, and I'm a fan of Bianca, but we were all talking about how we felt it just kind of plateaued. Like that was probably one of the least biggest pops of the night was Bianca came in. I felt like she definitely should be having bigger pops at this point in her career. And I think it's like my friends, when we watch it, we kind of just we root for her because we want her to do good. But it's like we kind of feel like they are dropping the ball with Bianca as well.
Interesting.
I'm not sure if you have any input, but.
Yeah, what kind of crowd reaction did Bianca get compared to other top-level babyfaces on the show tonight?
Oh, definitely on the lower end. It was the top of the night for sure has to be Edge, Cody, Brock. Brock was a huge one. Obviously, no, I don't think a lot of people were expecting to see Brock in there tonight. Kevin Owens got a huge one. I think top two has to be Brock, Cody, and the arena for sure. Edge, actually, those three were definitely the top. And Bianca, I said, I would feel like she was kind of like a mid-carder, to be honest. Like, I don't think, if you're hearing that pop, you wouldn't think that she's headlining the women's side of WrestleMania.
Go ahead, Effie. Yep.
No, you can go.
Yeah, so well, Effie knows what questions we're going to ask. It's just a matter of in what order, Tom. Why don't you throw a question in and see if you can surprise them. We'll try to keep them on its toes.
Well, I already mentioned earlier one that I want to ask, so I'll swerve and go a different direction. You mentioned that KO got one of the bigger pops of the night. When he came out, and maybe, you know, the camera was facing a different direction. Well, no, that they take the sound from the same mics anyway. Forget that. When he emerged from the entryway, it sounded like someone turned on a hairdryer, like one of the worst, like, oh, wow, I thought KO was going to get a big pop, but that sounded super fake to me. And now you've disproven that because you were there and you heard the big pop. So I'm going to specifically ask about the other entrance that sounded that way to me with the Street Profits. I don't know if I imagine that by that point in the show, you knew that it was going to be an Angelo Dawkins singles match. But when the Profits came out, it sounded like the fakest crowd noise I'd ever heard them put on WWE TV. What kind of pop did they get?
It definitely wasn't the level of like the pop stars of Cody and Brock and KO, but it was definitely a pop, though. It wasn't. I wouldn't say it was fake noise.
Okay.
Put it in. It was actually louder than theories, and I had something to say about that too. I think it was the first time I've been in an arena with Theory's new music. I like Theory. I'm definitely a Theory fan, but I think they need to change his music. It's like it's just not like a pop, like a main star pop like theme song. It was just, I feel like it's not like a Roman or like I'm gonna Brock music hits. You know what's coming. Well, we actually know what's coming. It's just not, you know, to me at least, it doesn't get that like huge pop sound. So actually, I think the Street Profits got a bigger pop than Theory did actually.
Interesting. Well, I'm
huge,
pleased
though.
To hear that actually
huge.
Because. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I'm pleased to hear that just because I felt just having Theory get an enhancement match over a, honestly, like a, at this point, a lower card, what feels like a lower card babyface, it felt like a lame follow-up to the match announcement and the Cena segment last week to me. So at least it was a bit more effective in the arena. But now I will ask, you know, what I guess is becoming my signature question, did you get there early enough to watch the main event matches? Mm-hmm. And if so, what did you think of the NXT talent?
I did not. I just got there like 5 minutes right before my friends were running late, and they had a ticket, so I couldn't get in.
Okay.
They had me hostage.
Well, I'll let me tell you that if you had gotten there early, you would have just loved Dante Chen and Trick Williams.
Yeah, one's pretty local, right? One's from Boston.
Oh,
well,
it must be.
I thought he was.
Must be Trick then, because yeah. Since Chen's from Singapore, so yeah, I didn't know that about Trick. Cool.
Oh, I don't know. I could be wrong, but yeah, I know one of the questions that Wade likes to ask is the capacity of like the center that we're at. It's 14,000 apparently. I would say that it was pretty full. The only thing that wasn't full was where the hard cam is. There was probably like four or five rows that was actually filled, and the rest was like blocked out. I'm not sure if they're going to sell them. I've been to a lot of shows, and they usually don't have that many rows blocked out for the hard cam. So I'm not sure if they're just going to sell them. But I checked tickets right before, like 5 minutes before the show, and there was like two sections left with seats left. So it was pretty sold out, actually sold out show. It was just that little section right there.
You talked about the best reactions of the night. What was the low point of the show in terms of crowd interest? My reading from watching on television was the that the crowd died off a bit for Corbin, Seth Rollins, and maybe Austin Theory, Angelo Dawkins. But yeah, what stood out as maybe a low point in terms of crowd heat?
Oh, it was for sure the Elias and
Bronson Reed.
Bronson Reed, for sure. That was the bathroom break.
Yeah.
And it was, I waited like 2 minutes. I went, the corridors were slammed. Like the bathroom line was huge, the food line was huge. That was for sure the unofficial break of intermission of the show, 100%. I say,
to walk with Elias. It's just a matter of which direction.
Yeah, definitely not the right direction they're hoping for nowadays. But I think they dropped the ball on him. I mean, I wouldn't say that's necessarily his fault, but yeah, definitely was the intermission break of the night. Seth and Corbin. Yeah, Corbin didn't get a huge pop at all, really. I feel like people weren't really into him, at least in Providence. And Seth got a huge reaction, though. There was a lot of Seth signs. I know you looked at Seth signs and Seth T-shirts. So, Seth, I know you asked this too, so I've seen a lot of Seth shirts, Cody WrestleMania shirts, like the American Nightmare one, a lot of We The One shirts, and those have to be the top three for sure, the We The Ones, Seth and Cody, and a lot of Seth signs. So I think a lot of people were into Seth, but it's not that particular match. So those have to be the two, and I feel like a lot of people were definitely confused at the end of the Bianca match, where Bianca and Asuka just stare at each other. And I was like, wait, what's happening here? Like,
yeah, we got some emails on
awkward.
That, too. That
I'm not sure
weird.
How that translated. Yeah, I'm not sure how that translated on TV, but it was super weird in person.
It was weird to watch on TV. Yeah, the build to Bianca Asuka is somewhat perplexing. And I mean, in the when Asuka came out, did you sense a buzz in the crowd, like, oh, this is a moment, or not? Like, because I don't know that they've done a particularly specific job giving fans reason to be for or against Asuka's quest to become champion. And they've changed her character, but for her to just start like leaking blue slime out of her mouth and then start laughing maniacally, it just sort of seemed to die out there as a segment. And then they announced, oh, Bianca and Asuka are going to team next week against Chelsea and Carmella. It's like, well, why would they want a team? Don't they have some agency in this? Do they have to team with each other? Asuka was taunting Bianca with a belt, and it just, yeah, the whole thing just feels awkward to me. So yeah, just in terms of crowd reaction and also your thoughts on that.
You know, there was I would say zero, but there was definitely probably not the pop they were expecting when Asuka came out. I feel like no one really, like, the energy in the arena, at least, that wasn't a big time feel in the arena at all. Kind of just like you would think, probably to those average fan, that it was like a mid card show where a mid card, like, I'm blanking the term right now, like mid card, like, match for WrestleMania, you would think it would be if you weren't a hardcore fan. Us hardcore fans know what's going on, but definitely doesn't have that big time feel in the arena, at least. And I actually sent it to you in an email. I'm not sure if you read it or not yet, but I was just asking you because I thought that segment was so weird in person. And then I was thinking, yeah, I don't understand, like, the Asuka fascination. I know everything's not for everybody, and they target certain people with certain characters, obviously. But for me, at least, I just don't understand, like, the Asuka fascination. I never seen her previously before WWE. So at least for me is watching, I don't understand what's so good about Asuka. Like, even, like, with Nakamura, I get why people like him. I'm not the biggest Nakamura fan, but I get it. I see why people would like him. I don't see why anybody would like Asuka, for me, fully honest. I mean, can you guys change my thought on that process? I don't understand it at all.
Yeah, Tom, talk about her journey also, you know, in particular through NXT, and what is special about her. Because, I mean, I guess she stands out more in a weaker version of the women's division than a strong women's division, because her top asset was just her work, her work rate, her athletic ability, her ring acumen. But, you know, as a character, it seems like they've been a little unsure how to frame and market her. But talk about her journey through NXT and why you think she is special, if you do.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mention that, because her dominant reign that ended up surpassing Goldberg's reign on NXT, or reign, streak on NXT, was during one of the relatively weaker phases of that division. I mean, plenty of good personalities, but the work rate wise, Asuka was pretty much carrying the division at that point. Other people would be able to speak to her days in Japan as Kana. I've gone back and watched some of those matches online because she has made me enough of a fan that I wanted to do that. But it's just cherry picking, you know, Google results at that point for me. I haven't seen anything that I didn't like, for whatever that's worth. But it really was that incredible NXT presentation. She came in extremely strong. They gave her, if I remember correctly, and we have not gotten to this point 8 years back yet, they gave her the exact same introduction as they gave to Kenta when he came in as Hideo Itami. They introduced him as Kenta. The phrase they used was international superstar, and they kept saying that over and over again, but, you know, from Japan. And he was introduced with Kenta on the screen, but then Kenta melts away, and he explains, you know, that he's now going to be known as Hideo Itami. And I seem to recall the same thing happening for her. But I don't know. I guess that's an extra detail that I waste my breath on, because the point is, she was just incredible in the ring, absolutely incredible. And it'll be interesting to revisit when we get to that point in our retrospective on VIP. I don't recall them doing too much character-wise. I remember it just being purely based on, you know, she is just unbeatable, except, and I've heard people argue against this, but in my opinion, she always made you wonder at the takeovers, you know, she felt beatable. So her matches were still engaging. It wasn't like, oh, well, we know Asuka's just going to win. And again, I've heard people testify that they felt that way. But I was always engaged. She was able to tell stories and show people, like, she had a match against Nia Jax. And Nia, she made Nia feel like a threat. She had a match against Eva Marie. And I remember being worried that she was going to lose to Eva Marie, and this ongoing undefeated streak where she became champion was going to end. So I was very engaged with that, and they carried that over to the main roster. Asuka, I think the video packages introducing her were excellent, and she was one of the easiest picks to win a Royal Rumble ever. The year that she won, the first year that the women ever had their own Royal Rumble. And since then, it has been very hit and miss and much more based on her character. And at that point, it does become more subjective for me because I'm already rooted in, oh, I already have this base of reasons that I just explained as to why I like her. And now, you know, I'm just predisposed to enjoying her, and I'm enough of a fan that I've gone beyond the WWE product and watched her YouTube channel and followed her social media. And I just think her personality is great on top of everything else. Like, I believe, do I have this? I'm going to bungle the nationality on, I believe I know what nationality Mako Satomura is, even just the name, should give it away, but I'll shy away from saying it because I'm lacking the confidence in my thought process here. But like Mako Satomura, she's incredible in the ring. Absolutely incredible. I don't really know much about her personality. She seems great, but I do just rely on the work there. With Asuka, it has gone beyond that for me, but that is where it becomes more subjective. Although, unfortunately, we reach points like we've reached now. She's reintroduced herself. She's got the Kana haircut back. She's changed the makeup. She's focusing more on, you know, she's got a whole remixed thing going on. It's essentially the same, but it's fresh now, and she doesn't have a story, and we're just relying on the personality that's supposed to come across when she comes down to the ring. And they've so transparently just done like, okay, Bianca's going to wrestle Carmella. And then the next week she's going to wrestle Carmella's friend. And then the week after that, they're going to, you know, team up to tag against them together. Like I honestly missed where they announced that was going to happen, but I was already thinking like, well, next week they'll probably have the tag match. And unfortunately, like Asuka's laughing, it didn't translate well live. From what Effie's telling us, it didn't translate well on television. And Asuka didn't even get the effect from the capsule that she wanted to get. It didn't really – it coated her teeth, but it didn't dribble out of her mouth the way that she wanted it to. So it really just fell flat when that's all that you are leaning back on with a talent who you know, I don't know. It's a babyface versus babyface feud. I don't know why the match tonight. I mean, Chelsea was the one who got the spit in her face last week. Why wasn't tonight Asuka versus Chelsea? Chelsea is a terrible wrestler who is not being presented as anything other than an ineffectual wrestler, even though Corey Graves very disprovably says that what was the direct quote? I wrote it down, but whatever. Corey was like, oh, she was very successful on NXT. It's like, if you watched NXT, you know that wasn't the case, but okay.
Yeah.
You know, the match tonight went through a commercial break, and it went long enough with Chelsea kicking out of stuff that she shouldn't be kicking out of because they want to show off, like was the case with so many other matches tonight, with just people on the WrestleMania card being enhanced by people who are not. It was just showing off, here are Bianca's moves. Here's what Bianca does. Here's Bianca Belair. There's the product. So why couldn't that have been Asuka this week? Not that it would have been too much better, but if all you're bringing to the table is what worked so well in NXT, look what great matches she has, then show that off a little bit.
I want to shift, Effie, to the Cody promo. Cody got a great reaction, you said, coming out. Did he did that improve as a promo went on? Did he get the crowd fired up with that promo? I don't think it overstayed its welcome. I was a big fan of the Cody promo tonight, but I'm curious if it actually did go from a really good reaction to Cody to an even better reaction by the time he was done.
You know, 100%. Even during the match, there was a time, I'm not sure if you guys can tell on TV, but or if they like inputted noise, I'm not sure what they did, but there was definitely a point during the match where the crowd was kind of getting bored and kind of going to sleep. And then I remember he put LA Knight and wrestled, and he was pumping up the crowd. He definitely got the crowd back into it at that point. I think from that point on, he got the crowd into it. Then, you know, he won, and then he definitely got the crowd super into it with the promo. The crowd was definitely really engaged, and I think he definitely he turned the crowd from that little boring moment, I guess, within the match where he lost everybody, and then he changed everybody around. Everybody's definitely 100% behind Cody. There was definitely no boos at all. But I will say, a lot of people were also with LA Knight. There was a lot of yeah chants throughout the night, even before he came out. And I heard people, like, even just walking by in the corridors doing the yeahs and saying they can't wait for LA Knight to come out and cut a promo, which he did not. But he's definitely getting a big reaction, within the crowd. But a lot of people love the Cody, too. There's no type of heat within the arena at all for Cody.
You're saying there was no booing, no pushback at all for him?
No. There's no, like the Bautista stuff, nothing at all. Like, I think the crowd's 100% behind Cody. There's no fight back for it, at least in Providence.
Yeah. What did
you
think
of the
promo?
I said earlier.
And what did you think of the promo?
You know, I think it was great. I wasn't the biggest Cody fan before he left WWE. Obviously, his circumstances, you didn't get a chance to do a lot of promos, but was the biggest fan, and to be honest, I didn't really follow him as much when he left on his indie run and AEW. But when I did hear him in AEW, he didn't captivate me, to be honest. I'm not sure what it was. I never really paid him much attention in AEW, but something when he's been back, he's definitely he captivates me, at least, with his storytelling, with his like family, and getting over that hump to conquer Roman. I don't think he's going to be Roman. I think I've heard you guys say in the podcast a bunch of times. I think he's going to get injured, kind of postponed to SummerSlam. But I'm engaged right now. I'm definitely engaged. I love hearing him. And it's something where he's not saying it the same way every week. Like this week, he was so pumped up and energized. I was like, in the lower 100 section, so I can kind of see him like flexing his muscles. I can see how like intense he is while he was delivering that promo. And it definitely got me more engaged seeing how emotional, and it seems like it really does mean a lot to him. And I watched a lot of Cody promos this outside WWE where he's going on High 97, Rosenberg, and stuff like that. And it generally seems like he wants to do it for his dad. So I kind of feel him. I'm riding that journey with him. So hopefully he conquers Roman, but I don't see it happening. But yeah, I'm all in with the Cody, and he's definitely turned me around. And from his AEW days, where I feel like he is a true star now at WWE.
I also love the Heyman promo and the notion that they're trying to dictate to Cody that it's okay for you to be a contender. We'll accept that. We'll embrace that we want top contenders, and you are a top contender. But don't make it personal. Don't become a problem. That's a different category. It's like this ultimatum that they get to dictate how Cody approaches his attitude towards this match, the title, and Roman. And that's a heelish thing to do. They're trying to control someone else, and it's not their business to control him. But it's also a genuine threat to Cody that raises the stakes. And it gives Cody something to not flinch at or back down from. So I like the psychology of that. And, I was thinking, I was wondering how they were going to fill TV time each week to keep the build interesting, so it wasn't just they're hitting the same notes 2 weeks before Mania that they were 5 weeks before Mania. And this idea that Cody has this really important choice next week where Heyman said it will be the most important business and personal decision of his life. He has to choose whether he's a challenger or a problem. And again, it's the heel defining it and giving an ultimatum to a babyface who now gets to react to that next week. I think that's a compelling storytelling, and it adds a layer and a chapter to this that allows Cody's approach to this match and his interplay with Roman to evolve over time based on again, Paul Heyman setting certain parameters that Cody does not need to agree to. But if he doesn't, he's warned there'll be ramifications.
Yeah, definitely. And just like the in-person aspect of that too, when Paul came on the screen, crowd lost it. They loved it. Like they were happy to see Heyman. So definitely, he definitely has the swagger on the screen for sure.
Yeah. Another question in terms of crowd investment was for Edge. And if he got a nice reaction coming out, did he, like Cody, earn more of a reaction as the promo went on? Did the crowd like his line that I thought was a little clunky, getting into, you know, your weird hybrid and Irish, Australian, Mexican, Puerto Rican emo delight, and it sounds like a drink at a hipster coffee joint? Like, Edge seems like somebody who would be ordering a drink at a hipster coffee joint, like not somebody who would be making fun of hipsters at a hipster coffee shop. Did that work with the crowd? Were they into it?
The crowd was definitely pulled back at that point. Even my friends were like, whoa, what? Like, they were shocked that he said it, because you don't usually hear that often. Like, that type of kind of edgy comment, no pun intended, is just like, wow, did he really just say that? So it was kind of worse than when someone swears. So it was weird. It was like, because you just don't hear that often nowadays. So I don't know if they're into it. They were definitely shocked. They caught people's attention, that's for sure. I think it was kind of depends on the person. I thought it was kind of funny, but two of my friends I was with, they were definitely taken back. They laughed and chuckled, and they were like, damn, all right, I was not expecting that at all. So I think it was definitely an edgy, caught people off guard comment for sure. And a lot of people loved and actually got where Balor was going. With the the demon comment, I don't know the exact quote he said, but it definitely got the crowd really into it and all that. And two of my friends were with it. Oh snap, the demon's coming out. So it definitely intrigued people where they know where it's going for WrestleMania. It was definitely captivates. It makes me more intrigued too. What, this is like the 20th time they fought. I mean, it's kind of getting to the point where it's kind of annoying at this point, but it is cool when we all know the demon's gonna come out in Mania. So I think people are more engaged.
Yeah, you had Hell in a Cell and the Demon, and that takes a match that felt stale and certainly frames it in a way that has a chance to feel novel. My last question for you, I think, and then I'll throw it to Tom for any follow-up or additional topics, is Dominik and Rey, the interplay there. Man, was a crowd on Dominik's case. That had to be fun to witness in person. Tell me about that, the ovation Rey got. And then just how alive did that arena get when Dominik came out, the unexpected breakout heel of the past handful of months?
Yeah, people loved when I forget about it, actually. Rey got a huge reaction. He got a humongous reaction. The entire arena, at least on my end, where I was standing, everybody stood up. So, definitely Rey has everyone's attention still. And when Dominik came out, it was pretty engaging. Like obviously I've heard a whole bunch of wrestling podcasts, and you guys always say, and obviously known, a reaction is better than no reaction. And he was getting a reaction for sure, getting the what chant after everything he said. And I thought he did a pretty good job of handling the what chant. He was speeding up his cadence, so he was kind of ignoring it. And then he was repeating on purpose, which I thought was pretty funny. Which it sounds like he kept repeating himself. I'm not sure if he did it on purpose or not. But it was funny. I thought it was a kind of a comeback at it. And, the crowd was loving to hate him, for sure. So, I mean, people can – I'm not the biggest fan of him, but I think he's handling it well, where he's definitely developing as a heel. And I think he's kind of embracing at this role at this moment in time. And I'm just kind of intrigued. I think he handled it well. I thought the presentation was good. The entire crowd was loving to hate him. Rey played his part well, but there's the countdown was on the arena today. It was 15 days to Mania, or like 17. How much longer are they going to ride this out? When is Rey going to accept the challenge? Like, when do you guys think that will happen? Is it Rey fully on Raw now?
Yeah.
I don't – so there's one more Raw to come. Like, what's he going to do? Like, Dominik kind of already did everything he possibly can, the Eddie comment, saying everything he possibly can to, get Rey to say yes. So what is going to make Rey say yes? I don't know what's going to happen next.
I don't know, but I'm eager to see what it is that ultimately triggers Ray to agree to something. He's been steadfast in turning down, no matter how taunted and prodded he's been by his son. Tom, your thoughts or speculation on that?
Yeah, I actually thought pretty specifically about this, because if there was anything that was surprising to me about this, it's that, especially after they went out of their way to put a pause on the storyline, they've reminded us of it, and Dom certainly makes his mentions almost every time he opens his mouth, but now that Ray is back on Raw, it ended the same way it was ending before he left Raw. He just walks away hanging his head. And like you said, and like Effie said, Dom has now said everything he can say, and Ray is still walking away. So now Dom has to do something. What is that thing? And while earlier in the show I was saying, well, I hope they don't wait until the very last minute to unite Sammy and KO, maybe this is something where they do wait till the last minute. It's, I believe, the first time that anyone has been inducted into the Hall of Fame while they're still a fully active member of the roster. And, of course, at first blush, it makes you wonder, like, oh, are they going to turn this into an angle? But the Hall of Fame ceremony, even though it's been diminished over the years, it still is extremely special. Triple H put it extremely well when he said, or no, Triple H said that somebody else told him this, but I forget who that person was. Maybe Michael Hayes or something like that. But he relayed that the two biggest moments in a WWE wrestler's career are winning the world title and getting inducted into the Hall of Fame. So I think there is still a huge level of respect for that. But Dominic kidnapping his sister Aaliyah, like, that's not enough. Aaliyah just shows up every once in a while, and they're like, hey, Ray's family is here, and we don't really care. So how about Ray gets his full – they don't mess with it. He gets his full Hall of Fame induction. Conan comes out there. He tees it up. He, the same way everybody does, he explains why his relationship with Rey Mysterio was so special over the years. Rey comes out, gives his whole speech. Then after that's done, after they've had the genuine Hall of Fame moment, and Conan has long since left after introducing Rey, then Dominic comes on the screen, and he has a bloodied Conan in his hands. And now they're now at the last minute, literally after the go-home SmackDown has ended, we add another match to the card. That's the best thing I can think of, and it doesn't force Conan to do anything physical, just give his speech and then go back and put some makeup on.
Tom, is there anything else you want to ask Effie before we let him go?
No, he covered the LA Knight thing. I don't know if there was anything more specific about the LA Knight pop. It's just that he's quite a story right now, that he's got a groundswell, and Corey, a reference on television that he's one of the fastest rising stars in WWE. And I thought it was a bit of a risk to put that as the enhancement for Cody, since LA Knight mm-hmm. is really picking up his fans right now. But yeah, I guess the only thing specific that we didn't cover was the exact pop that he got. But clearly people were chanting his catchphrase in the concourse.
Effie, is there anything else you want to convey to us about the experience tonight? Any segments we didn't talk, like about Kevin Owens and Solo Sikoa, for instance, or anything else? Yeah, just up to you.
Yeah, I'll give you guys a couple of talking points. So one, randomly, I didn't know that Johnny Gargano and Dexter Lumis had any like loyalty to Edge. So that one, that confused me. Two of my friends were also confused as well. I'm not sure if I missed that in the build to that. Two, when Logan Paul came on screen, he got booed pretty good. And when they announced Roman coming next week, people were upset about that he wasn't in the arena today. So people were upset that Roman wasn't there. Also, it was very confusing how Brock was there for, like, confusing, and I have to respect it, that he comes to Providence for, like, 2 minutes, does whatever he does, leaves, and probably is leaving back in Minnesota at this point on the night. So, I mean, shout out to him for being a legacy star to do that, because that's crazy. Like, just get that payday is wild, because that was, like, I don't get the purpose of that. He's there for, what, not even 2 minutes.
I would not be surprised if someday we learn, Effie, that Brock Lesnar's current contract is $1 million per minute. It would be the way to explain his short matches, his brief appearances. I could imagine the power play Lesnar pull just saying, I want to see if I can have only certain colored M&Ms just to make sure that, you know, the event organizers are reading my demands. I'm going to be particular about something arbitrary, and they get, you know, a kick out of it. I could imagine Lesnar's going, let's see if they'll take this deal, and let's say it's take it or leave it. I'm joking, but it doesn't sound actually implausible based on how he's utilized either. Cause you're right. It is just bop in and leave. And my God, what a way to earn a living. He's beyond earning a living now. What a way to get rich.
I'm jealous.
Filthy.
Yeah,
rich.
I'm jealous for sure.
Yeah.
I'm definitely jealous. And I'll leave you one last one. Like I said earlier on Spanish, and I am very shocked because how usually WWE does not capitalize on these type of things in the pop culture world. I'm a huge Bad Bunny fan, and it's crazy how much they have done it properly this time with a megastar that's currently a megastar. Two of my friends, I like to travel a lot, and we're saying, and they didn't know that Backlash is in Puerto Rico. They're like, wait, what? And Bad Bunny's in
Puerto
Rico. We should go. I'm like, I'm going first about that. But their second off is like, yeah, it's crazy how they're utilizing him, how he's such a megastar now, how he loves WWE. It always feels like WWE doesn't capitalize on those type of celebrities, and I think they're knocking out the park with Bad Bunny. Just get them to do that. And I'm not sure what your thoughts are on Bad Bunny and how they utilize him, but one thing I think they could – one more person they can capitalize on is Damian Priest. I mean, I don't know how many tall, Hispanic, fluent, bilingual stars they have, but I think they could be – I wouldn't say they're dropping the ball on him, but I think they've been utilizing better, like how they're utilizing a Bad Bunny type of, you know, star, especially bilingual, tall, has the presence. I like his swag, I like his fashion. So I think, you know, I guess my last comment here would be I think they should use Damian Priest more. And, I'd love to hear your thoughts on Bad Bunny and how they utilize him as well.
Yeah, I mean, he's a bigger star now than he was when they first utilized him. And it is kind of a bummer for Damian Priest that he had that connection, that on-air relationship, and it didn't lead to Priest being a bigger star. I mean, Priest is being overshadowed in order, but mostly by Dominic and by Rhea and even by Finn Balor, who's great, but not a lot of, there's a lot of wear on the tread in terms of his character and how he's been utilized and the smiling Finn and the NXT, back to NXT Finn. And it's like he is the fourth guy in terms of momentum. And granted, Todd Martin made this point once on the Fix podcast, the VIP show. People who tend to not be stars on the indie scene or wherever they go tend to not become stars anywhere else. Like something has kept him from breaking out despite checking a lot of boxes that you just mentioned, Effie, and associating with Bad Bunny. There's something that just isn't quite latching on where they feel confident moving him up. But it does feel wrong. And I'm not saying that he should move up. I'm saying it feels wrong that he doesn't. And I think everyone's still trying to kind of figure out if there's something more to tap into to make that work. Tom, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I really liked his NXT stuff. I shied away from saying NXT run. Because, I don't know, there wasn't much of a run. But what he did do in NXT, I thought was really nuanced from a character standpoint. And it just hasn't clicked on the main roster. I still, like Effie, I'm waiting for him to take the next step up. I think at this point we could hope for a Baron Corbin-level ceiling. And I guess when I say that, I mean like the best that we've seen of Baron Corbin, not exactly where he's at right now. He's capable of more. It's just unfortunate that since the call-up there have been hiccups, like when he is put out there as a United States champion to give a promo, he didn't put his best foot forward. And when he is put in there to have a big flagship, whether or not it was the main event, I don't recall, but you know, match with Edge, probably the main event, he also didn't have his best foot forward, unfortunately. Just when the spotlight shines, it hasn't been his day, but he's a talent that I've continued to believe in. And when they announced, I mean, it's just because of the nationality thing, but you know, when they announced the Puerto Rico show, I thought, you know, I hope Priest gets a singles match, especially because he really has been sidelined in his own faction lately. Edge didn't even refer to him. Edge mentioned Dom and Rhea, and then the only semi-mention that Priest got was when he was referred to as Lurch from the Addams Family. So there's that. And yeah, you know what? The idea of Gargano and Loomis being aligned with Edge, I was wondering that when they ran out, because I was like, that's an odd person. Why? Yeah. I didn't expect Johnny to even be on the show after he made he's not returned to NXT, but he's showing up on NXT to build to a takeover or a premium match at Stand and Deliver. Same thing. People get too hung up on the takeover name. It's just a word. There's my hot take there. I was really trying to force it in my mind. I was like, I remember when Edge interviewed Gargano on his podcast and called him Johnny Kick Him in the Ding Ding as a nickname. But what is this? And then Corey had to say, as they were fading to commercial, Corey shouts, "There's a scheduled match." So. Yeah. So I guess you didn't get it in the arena, but that's the reason that apparently the match had already been scheduled. So Gargano and Loomis were already in the chute waiting to come out. And
gotcha. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, that was confusing. And I'm not sure. I saw email played this after the show went off air. They were going to triple team KO again, but KO body slammed Solo through the table, and then he ran out. And got away, and he had left the arena faster than like half the show, half the arena, because he literally ran by me into his car. He was out after the show. So him and Hayes, I'm forgetting his first name, but I'm blanking out his names. Freebird, I'm bringing out his first name, but Hayes,
Michael P.S.
Michael Hayes and Kevin Owens ran right by me, so they were out after the show.
So funny.
And
wow.
Yeah. And appreciate you, Wade and Tom. I have one plug. I have a podcast as well, EG Pod Thunder, on all social media, all podcast platforms. If you can like, subscribe, it's appreciated. And I appreciate all the shows you guys do. I listen after every SmackDown and Raw. So I love all the work and. Yeah, it was a great experience. It was like, come by and do it again. It's greatly appreciated.
Effie, I appreciate it. I hope we hear from you again, even when you're not an on-site correspondent. I know you just did a sign-off, and it feels like we should end here, but I have one other thing I really want to ask you about,
yeah.
If you have
go
a second.
For it. Go for it.
And that is, you brought up Lesnar, and I want to get your take on the buzz or the vibe or the lack of in the building for Lesnar and Omos facing off. Because I think there's people who think nobody cares about this match. Everyone's offended by it. What a waste of Brock Lesnar. It's insulting. And then there's also the possibility that there is a part of the WWE audience that is okay with this slice of WWE, this intrigue of, as the announcers put it, and you didn't hear this, Effie, but can Lesnar solve Omos? Because Lesnar's dominated everybody else, but look, he's so big. So I'm just kind of curious, in the building, when those two enter the ring, was there sort of a whoa moment that felt genuine? Was it mocking? Did it sustain itself? Like, did you come away thinking more or less about this as a matchup for Lesnar at a WrestleMania?
I will say there was a couple of kids behind me, and they were definitely like had like that reaction where it's like, wow, like look how big this dude is, and then. Well, yeah, Lesnar came out after Omos, but still when Lesnar was making his circle around the ring, everyone was like, wow, look how big Lesnar is. And then when Lesnar stepped in front of Omos, even my friend is pretty knowledgeable amongst, like, he's an athlete as well. He's like, God damn, he's like, Lesnar's big, and he looks tiny compared to Omos. So I think people definitely are engaged with how Brock is obviously so big, and he looks so tiny compared to Omos. And when Omos came out first and obviously went to commercial, during the commercial break, everyone was screaming, we want Lesnar. So, I mean, they were into it. I'm not sure. He was scheduled on the website, but I'm not sure how many people checked it out. Honestly, I never do. That's like my first time I ever did go into a show, and I've been told like I put a million of them. So I knew Brock was coming, but I don't know how many people knew Brock was going to be there. But a lot of people were into, they were chanting his name. You know, we want Lesnar that entire commercial break, so... I'm not sure how long that is, but maybe like 30 seconds, 45 seconds. The entire time, the crowd was anticipating Lesnar. So I'm not sure if that indicates people are into the match, but they're definitely were intrigued to see Lesnar at least face off against Omos in person in Providence at least. So it wasn't dead, that's for sure. That was it wasn't even close to the deadest a segment of the night. I think that definitely belongs to Elias and Corbin. Elias and then Corbin as well. With just people running into him, but Elias, hand slide was him. Brock cannot even come close. I mean, people were definitely into it for sure. I want to say they're into it as if like a Cody and Roman, but they're definitely intrigued.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm glad we got your take on that. That's interesting. We'll continue to try to get a read on how actual WWE audiences are reacting to that, because I am not confident in whatever direction it would go. I could imagine people booing and catcalling or being silent, but I also didn't rule out the possibility there would be a segment, a sizable segment, intrigued and into it because it is so novel and different. Certainly that's what WWE is banking on, even if it wasn't their primary dream choice for Lesnar.
Yeah, I think it could have been better. It just went maybe a minute or two longer. I think it was just so short. It's like, whoa, that's all we got? Like, I heard someone in the background, this guy was screaming all night, catcalling all night. He was like, that's it? It's like, I actually agree with him this time around. Because,
that's
that was
funny.
Short. So...
That's
funny. Yeah, I got to check on tonight. But, yeah, it was super short. I think it could have benefited at least maybe a minute longer, or at least Brock tried to throw the ref like he usually does. It would mean he didn't do anything. So I'm not sure if it was supposed to be Brock
or at least Jamie
nervous
Noble.
Or – yeah, exactly. It was just throw Jamie down the corridor or something. So it was definitely – I think it was so short where it was okay.
Hey, Effie, what was Michael Hayes wearing?
He was wearing a purple blazer, his hat, and I couldn't check out his jeans. I can't remember. I definitely remember his purple blazer with the feather hat. And Owens was wearing the same exact thing he was wearing in the ring. He wasted no time.
Yeah,
he's had a sweater on. And ignored everybody.
I would have been supremely disappointed with any other answer. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, the match from glass definitely is. Guys, I appreciate your time. I know you guys keep going and doing what's my welcome, but I appreciate you guys and if you guys can follow the podcast page, GG Pop Thunder. Thanks, Tom. Thanks, Wade.
You keep saying your podcast, that podcast, so quickly. Say it slower in case people want to check it out.
EG Pod of Thunder. EG Pod of Thunder. It's on literally all social media, all podcast platforms. So it's my initials, EG Pod of Thunder, baby. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you, Wade. And
excellent.
Thank you, Tom.
Yep. I'm all about plugs. All right, they might as well be effective if we're going to do it. Thanks, Effie. Appreciate it. Talk to you hopefully soon.
Appreciate it.
You bet.
Bye.
We are not, if you want to be an on-site correspondent and plug something, you're welcome to. I mean, for that kind of time and effort and contribution into the show. If you got a favorite charity or a band you want to promote or a favorite TV show that you think doesn't get enough attention, that can be a thing. You can certainly bring it up. And if you have a podcast, obviously that's okay too. All right. We got some emails and some phone calls to get to. We're running long, so we'll just pace ourselves here, try to get through some more listener feedback. And we'll start with Brad in Florida. Brad, thanks for holding so long. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Hey, guys. Wade, always great to speak with you. Tom, thanks also. I'll be pretty quick, but couple points. I thought Cody came across great tonight. I think if this is actually in the Roman, with whatever's been going on with Roman, the best he's come across. I think he was very confident. I love that he had some intensity. He was almost getting fed up with the Bloodline and their antics. And I just thought it came across really good. But also what I thought it came across good tonight was exactly what Effie was just talking about with Brock. I actually found it pretty interesting that it was a different version of Brock, which he probably didn't get in the arena, but just seeing him a little bit hesitant and a little bit tentative and a little bit scared or nervous, that was a different look for Brock. And I thought that came across really good on TV, probably didn't come across at all in the arena. It just came across a really short thing that made no sense probably in the arena. But with the expressions Brock was making, I actually found it pretty interesting. It actually got me excited about this. And I thought their crowd seemed very into it. I mean, they were saying, holy S, like an NXT crowd when Brock and Omos were standing there. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying I'm the most excited about that match than anything else on the card, certainly not. But it's definitely, it got more compelling tonight to me than less compelling, that's for sure.
Well, I think that's what they're aiming for. You know, every one of these shows, they want to make every match a little more compelling. And if it starts from a low point and it gets you away from that low point, I mean, that's as much of a success as, you know, Cody amping up something you might have already been interested in. And that's what it was designed to do. Well, Fred.
Do you guys think that it's possible that Cody had in his contract when he came back to WWE that he will hold a world championship within 1 year? Is that possible? Because
I don't think Vince does that. I'll put it this way. If John Cena, I'm trying to think of a good example. If John Cena, or I'm trying to think of somebody who would care, because Brock wouldn't care, or Dwayne Johnson wouldn't care. Let's say Kenny Omega, just for example. He's like, oh, I really want to be loyal to Tony, and, you know, the Bucks already re-signed, and I want to stay here. I'm a little nervous about how I'll be used, and, you know, but I care about my legacy. Can you put in there that, you know, I'll get a world title run, you know, within the first year, 18 months? I mean, even that I don't think would fly. So that's a close example to Cody being an EVP, but he was on the outs. Promising championships just isn't a Vince McMahon thing, and I just don't think that's something Levesque would want to set a precedent for. It's a pretty firm no. I mean, I'm playing it out in my head, trying to conjure up a scenario where I think that they would do that, and I think you would have to be such a big name or a big celebrity and a big get, and I don't think Cody or Kenny amount to that, and anybody else who's a big enough deal isn't going to be a, quote, mark for the title the way that, you know, maybe Cody would have a passion passion for wanting to be a champion. Yeah, so if you want to be champion, you probably don't have the leverage to be a champion. I guess would be my short answer, and I don't know that WWE wants to set that precedent. Tom, what's your reaction to that?
I agree that titles are usually not are not put in contracts most likely, and even if it does come up in conversation, in negotiation, I'm picking all the wrong words here, even if it comes up in negotiation, it's with the giant caveat that plans can change.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, Vince McMahon's policy has been, we will give you an opportunity. Our track record shows it, but nothing's guaranteed. You got to go earn it. You got to earn that crowd response. And I'm sure Cody's feeling that pressure. You know, I mean, everybody at every level does when they are on Raw or SmackDown, you know, whether it's an NXT talent or a free agent signing, there's that pressure to be sure that you live up to expectations in the build, and not everybody does, but a lot of people do. And yeah. But anyway, go ahead, Brad.
Yeah. And it's funny, you know, I went to NXT 2 weeks ago, and just hearing Effie talk about the seats, I noticed when Bronson Reed came in the ring, there was a lot of empty seats behind the hard cam. I guess people were taking their bathroom break or whatever they were doing. But it's just kind of funny. I went to NXT 2 weeks ago, and my wife and my kids got up literally for 2 minutes to get, like, water bottles. And three people came and filled our seat immediately. And I'm surprised that they didn't have seat fillers, like people ready to fill those seats so instantly. Because I know that they do that, but, like, it was just, you know, you had a wrestler coming in the ring. They were about to, you know, kind of make their little pose in the ring and everything. And it was just funny that, like, at NXT, where I was not even on camera, really, I was, like, on the side of the ring. They were so eager to fill the seats with three people. But here, it was, like, there were so many empty seats where they were using, like, alternative cameras once they realized, I guess, that there were so many empty seats. But that's not important. My last question is just quick opinion on three people that I'm curious if you think get on the WrestleMania card in some way, shape, or form. Number one, Damian Priest. Like, do you think, because with this being a Hell in a Cell now, like, what does he do? He just stands outside the ring with Finn Balor? Is that kind of your best guess, or does he actually get involved in something legitimate?
To Tom, does anything come to mind for Priest that seems logical and likely?
I wouldn't be surprised if he tries to interfere in the match, but I don't expect him to be a part of the Demon entrance. So I think it'll just be Edge and Finn for a while.
Gotcha.
And yeah,
okay.
I don't know if there's a match that jumps out. I mean, there's nothing that they're even hinting at right now. I don't know if, I mean, when we got a tag match tonight, so I don't think they'd just do a rematch of those people. So yeah, I mean, I think there's a chance he misses He missed, you know, I mean, it's sort of a gimmick WWE does, you know, that, you know, everyone covets those limited spots on Mania. But for that gimmick to work, some people have to be left out. He might be one of them.
Second one is LA Knight, which I'm sure you're not surprised I'm asking about.
LA Knight, it seems like, I mean, he's on television losing, but he's getting crowd response. He clearly has talent. I think WWE perceives him as somebody who, you know, can lose and still be strong, but I think they underestimate how fans did not define him down to that level yet, and that WWE is actually doing it. It's becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy that he'll be seen as a loudmouth mid-carder instead of somebody who can become more than that. And if he misses WrestleMania, if he's not given a match of any match or a match of any significance, it you know, further defines him down. But again, that's, I mean, I haven't looked at how many matches either are announced or are, you know, unannounced but going to happen to assess whether I think that they're going to be adding more. But, you know, LA Knight, I would be pretty high on my list of somebody that I try to find something for him to do. What do you think, Tom?
He is going to be – he's going to come out for a brief little angle where he cuts a promo saying all the same stuff that he's already been saying about an LA Knight moment in LA, and then the New Day, or perhaps just Xavier, depending on what state the New Day, the New Day's health is in, will come out riding a big papier-mâché unicorn, and they'll embarrass him.
Or Stone Cold Steve Austin makes his cameo at LA Knight's expense.
You know what? I love it. I love it. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you can just imagine him, you know, Steve Austin going, no, this is not, you're not going to hijack this show and give him a stunner.
I'm not just popping for Austin. Like, that genuinely feels like something, like that LA Knight out there running his mouth feels like a moment where the glass could break.
Yep.
And
yep.
Yeah, I definitely dig that. And, you know, when I said papier-mâché unicorn, that's absolutely something that realistically could happen. So it wasn't a joke, but I like the glass breaking. That's a good one.
I hope they don't bring what back. You know, that's not.
Oh my God. They're going to go back and forth going, what? Yeah. What? Yeah. No, you called it. That's exactly what's going to happen.
I'm hoping it doesn't. And I hope I don't get blamed for putting that out there, but it does seem like it's something that they might do.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, Austin lives there now, right? I mean, I know we associate him with Texas, but I don't think he even has his Texas home anymore. Right.
You know what? I don't know if did he sell the ranch?
He sold it, and I can't – I mean, that's back when he had a podcast, so we were all following along. But I if something has developed since then, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I haven't tracked his
whereabouts.
His homesteading, if he has two words down to one. Yeah. All right, Brad, back to you.
Yeah, and just the last one I wanted to ask about was Carmella. Does she – because, like, it kind of seemed like maybe she was going to get into, like, the Asuka Bianca thing in some way, but, like, I don't think they would really do that, but I don't know. I feel like I really like Carmella personally. I know, you know, to each their own. I know a lot of people are just think it's like a joke, and I just think she's very funny and very, like, I just like her. And I was wondering if you think she gets in any place. The only thing I could see is maybe, I don't even know if she would turn on Chelsea Green and they would do something like that, but I don't even know if that's big enough. That's like more like a Raw mid-card match. I don't think that's WrestleMania worthy unless they made it bigger, but I don't know. Do you think Carmella has any shot of getting on the card, or just she came back too late and there's nothing for her type of thing?
I don't see an obvious match for her or them that's, you know, WrestleMania worthy in terms of, you know, being one-on-one or two-on-two. Tom?
Brad, if you listen to any of my other podcasts, you know darn well that I am a very big Carmella fan. I don't think it's even the timing of the comeback. I think that she's just not going to be on the show. She is currently in the role of enhancing the people who are on the card, just like, you know, like Chelsea enhanced Bianca tonight. It was Carmella's turn last week. Angelo Dawkins enhanced Theory tonight. It'll be Tez's turn next week, and they won't show up on the show. That's just how it goes.
Yeah, and all right,
Brad.
Yeah, and the Street Profits too, but I guess probably nothing for them either. Yeah. Thank you, guys. Have a good evening.
Yeah, and Before you hang up, I know we're maybe hung up already, but I know we're rushing for the door. But Brad, since you have been at the Performance Center to see NXT and you said you went to get snacks, I've gone far less since they transitioned to the Performance Center, and I won't detail right now as to why. There are many, many reasons. One of them is that darn shuttle system. But, dude, where are the bathrooms? Do you know?
Oh, they're outside by a trail. There's like a trailer outside. It was really cool, man.
Okay.
We met Roxanne Perez. She took a picture with us. We met Booker T walking right past us, high-fived my daughter.
I've noticed that every time I've gone. He's so personable. Oh, cool.
Yeah, he was great. He was great. And, they hand out bottles of water. It's really unbelievable. There's not a bad seat in the house. I honestly loved it. I loved it, man. Yeah, cool. I loved it.
Okay, so outside next to a trailer. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Gotcha. Exactly. Have a good night, guys.
Thanks, Brad.
Thanks, Brad.
Have a good week.
Thank you.
All right, we'll wrap up our callers with Kyle, then we'll sneak in a couple emails and topics that hopefully we haven't covered thoroughly yet. But first things first, Kyle, welcome. What are your thoughts on Raw tonight?
Yeah. I guess I wanted to just comment with that first caller, what it brought me up about Bianca. Now, I need to defend myself when it comes to Bianca, because I feel like it's like a touchy subject for a lot of people here. I'm not a Bianca Belair hater. I just feel like for me personally, when Becky and Sasha and Charlotte debuted in 2015, I was 18 at the time. So I have more of a personal connection with Becky because of that situation. And I feel like I've watched her from being the last kicker to the man, to Big Cup Bex to the man today. So I grew up with Becky, so I feel more connection with Becky than I do Bianca. And also, too, as Becky's character has definitely changed in terms of throughout the years, even Rhea as well. Like, every Rhea and Bianca came up the same as that time. Rhea was, as a babyface 2 years ago, wasn't all that great, and then she found this heel role that she's doing. It was in Judgment Day. She's is doing some great work now, and I think that's what Bianca needs to do with her the way she's been presented on TV today ever since she won the championship from Becky last year. She hasn't done anything to be all that credible. Becky's been main eventing Raw last year. She's been the main person they've been focusing on more than Bianca. So I feel like, to me, that's why I feel like I can't get behind Bianca, because there's nothing for Bianca in storyline for me to get invested in. So I just want to bring that up to that situation of how that's my overall problem with Bianca, is there's just something missing with her within her character that I can't get behind. So that's just it. I love her in the ring, but it's just the character isn't there that clicks for me like I do feel for Becky and for Rhea. So I just want to bring that up because it's like,
sure, yep.
You know, I saw that stuff.
Your name was. It's like in a debate, political debate. If someone says something, you get a chance to rebut it. So go ahead, Kyle. What else is on your mind?
Yeah. That was this Cody Rhodes feud with Roman. I'm trying to really – and now I'm not behind this either with this match because I just can't – I'm just trying to – it's just hard for me to get involved in this match because I'm not really, because I kind of really don't care, but I was watching this, I was thinking, okay, what is it going to be to push the edge for Cody for even more to even, I think I'm disappointed. I think I'm ready for them to actually brawl or something, or it's like, I don't know what it is. I feel like Cody Rhodes is kind of like Bianca Belair to me, where people want him to be the champion, but I don't know how he will be as champion. I don't know what's going to happen. He could lose too. That's also a possibility. The feeling with Cody is I don't really, I just get the sense, the same feeling that I felt for Bianca last year as well. So that's why I feel for Cody. It's like, it's not clicking for me because I just don't, I don't know. It's like, I think there's just something missing there that I don't know what it is with it. I don't know if it's because he got injured and then he comes back and thrust it to this title match after this is the second feud that he's feuding with the second major feud that he's facing, and it's the champion after Seth Rollins. So is it possible for it to be whatever he, let's just say that he wins, that they'll do, I don't know, what is there for him to do with the story they were telling him being tribute for his father, but then after, like, I'm wrong for me thinking beyond WrestleMania, but I'm just trying to envision what he's going to do with the championship if he wins and all this stuff, and how is he going to change or whatever. What's going to happen there? I guess how I'm feeling there.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know. I'm
just, yeah. So looking ahead, Tom, what do you think?
I admit I'm trying to analyze the what the question is here, but I think if Cody does win at WrestleMania, I think part of the reasoning might be fans that share your perspective, Kyle, that don't feel Cody is the star that they are presenting him as, and that validating what they are putting behind him by putting the title on him is part of the mission, would be part of the mission if they did that, along with, of course, the culmination of the Dusty Redemption angle there. Meanwhile, Roman has enough drama going on with the bloodline already that doesn't necessarily need it doesn't need the title. It's interesting without the title and might be interesting in different ways after Roman has lost the title. He's already shown the signs of paranoia. The commentary keeps saying the walls are crumbling in, but that's also the phrase that comes to my mind, that, you know, he's showing that, so maybe he just breaks and becomes more manic, loses his cool, because Roman's been so cool for years and so calm and stoic. But I think hopefully the match itself is the both the moment of it and the match. You know, I've talked a lot, or I've mentioned a lot, that moment before the bell rings where the two of them are just standing across the ring from one another. I believe that that's going to feel like a major moment, and hopefully it does, even for people who don't expect it to, even for people like you who that phrase sounds the way it sounds. I don't mean it that way. But, you know, even for people who may share your perspective that Cody doesn't belong in this role, hopefully that still feels like a big moment after the big dramatic entrances that they're both going to get in the excellent video package that WWE will put together all at the end of this, you know, epic spectacle of a two-night WrestleMania and everything. But also hopefully the match, because Roman slows things down so much.
Yeah, I think, and of course,
one of the first things that a veteran will tell you is slow down. You know, we just talked about Steve Austin. That's something that he says on his podcast all the time. I echo that, you know, in my analysis of NXT a lot, slow down. And a lot of people know that and they show that. Johnny Gargano is one of them. But I don't know if, and again, you know, I always have to mention, you know, I do not watch AEW. I think the only Cody match I saw in AEW was the cage match against, I want to say it was Wardlow. And if you want to count, I forget whether it was AEW yet at the point that he had the Dustin Rhodes match. That was incredible. But I guess I'd have to watch that again, but I don't remember ever seeing Cody slow down. And especially with the people that he fell in with during his time away from WWE, that's not the mentality at all. The opposite is the mentality. So hopefully being in there with Roman where, you know, even just the words that are said to one another, not calling spots, but, you know, Roman telling the storyline during, like, you know, being picked up by the ring mics and everything. Hopefully that really brings something else out of Cody that we haven't seen before. You know, Cody doesn't even need to jaw back at Roman, just slowing it down. And here's one example, that Drew McIntyre match at Clash at the Castle. It was slow. If you really go back and look at it, I mean, it's like in the mold of something like Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels. And I know I'm only picking from like the past 15 years of history here, however long that is. But when you really go back and break down what those matches are, it's like one move and then the dudes are just selling for so long. But everything means so, so, so much. And especially on giant, giant stages, like what Clash at the Castle brought, like what WrestleMania brings every year, it means that much more because it feels that much more dramatic. So, I think all of that should go a long way to help our collective perception of Cody and how WWE wants us to see him.
Yeah, I think Cody just being in the main event of WrestleMania, standing opposite of Roman Reigns, win or lose, is going to make him seem like a bigger star if he looks like he belongs. And I think he will, but I don't know he will. You know, I don't think it's 100% sure. But, you know, he has the self-confidence and the drive and, you know, innate natural charisma that then has been honed over the years. So, I mean, part of it is just, you know, you have to be in that moment and look like you belong. And then after that, if he wins the title and Roman is gone for a little while and he starts facing other challengers, that's the big test. And I use the Sting 1990 example. Not everybody passes it. Sometimes you're much better off as a challenger against a more experienced, established top heel. I don't have a dog in the fight, so to speak, you know, in terms of whether it works or not. But if they go with Cody, I'm fascinated. And it makes me, you know, think to Cena's promo about Theory, how, you know, if you lose, but if you win, you lose. I think that applies more to Cody as a babyface the day after Mania than it does Theory as a heel who, I mean, why wouldn't you want to get booed and, you know, have crowds react to him like, who are you to beat Cena? We don't believe you're ready for that moment. You know, Theory can just turn that into momentum as a heel character. But Cody's the one, and yet there's been no pushback yet, so I think he'll be fine. This is a different WWE than it was when the people who now attend AEW shows were disgruntled WWE fans buying tickets to WWE shows. Those people have splintered off, and WWE has replaced them, or they just are producing a better product, and fans who were complaining about babyface Roman love the bloodline and love Sammy. But whatever it is, you know, Kyle, it's a good question. We'll wait and see, but I'm not ruling out that Cody won't be a good alpha centerpiece babyface. In some ways, it's kind of what he was born to be. And the question is, would the stars align to give him the opportunity to prove that that's true?
Yeah. I'm also thinking too, because I did see like an AEW with Saraya, Ruby, and Tony Storm, like, because I know how they were in WWE, because they were, but at least Paige was booked like a main event in a women's side, and I know how good Ruby and Tony are. So if they came back, I would have a different perspective that I do Cody Rhodes. So they would actually, yeah, they're saying I just had that thought too, that I just wanted to bring up there. But the last thing I wanted to talk about is the potential tag team match that's been rumored for a while now between the Usos and Owens and Sammy. Like, I'm thinking to myself, you talk about when is the match between the Mysterios is going to happen. What about this tag team match that everyone is clamoring about, because they haven't really done anything? Owens is still saying, no, I'm not going to be teaming with you, Sammy, leave me alone. So when do you think that's going to be a thing where Owens is going to break and come together with Sammy Zayn? Because that hasn't happened yet either. So what do you think that's going to happen?
It's one of the things I like about the build this year, Kyle and Tom, is that we don't know what's going to cause Ray to say yes to Dominic. And we don't know what's going to cause Kevin to say yes to Sammy. I mean, we can, you know, conjure up different ideas, different ways it could play out, but we don't know yet. This is not a card where, oh, you know, everything was set every match of significance was set 3, 4, 5 weeks ago, and now they're just, you know, we're in rerun season. This is a time where we're normally typically going, oh, I can't wait till after WrestleMania so we can get some fresh things. They actually have done a really good job, and it's a credit to Paul Levesque. And his, you know, his circle, his creative team, this is still a fresh WrestleMania season with weekly developments, and that is one of them. It's not that you don't know where it's going to end up. It's just it hasn't ended up there yet. And, you know, I use the I Love Lucy example. You always know Lucy's – it's a classic TV show. People watch it. You can get off TikTok and watch some I Love Lucy. it deserves another generation to discover it and appreciate it. And, you know, her plan's not going to work. You know, Ricky's going to find out. But you still want to see it happen because you're invested in the characters and it's entertaining seeing it happen. And that's what we're getting here.
Oh, sure. No, I also love I Love Lucy. No, the breadcrumbs have been there. I hope that they peak at the right time. In my opinion, the right time is next week. And then the following week on the go homes, they put the punctuation on it. But yeah, next week I think is when they strike. But yeah, even if it feels like it's redundant right now, Kyle, I do feel that the breadcrumbs have been there to lead to the peak.
Is that going to be a meme, just a picture of me going, kids, get off TikTok and watch I Love Lucy?
Get off of TikTok. I'm so glad that I grew up on some of those old I Love Lucy in particular. Like, that was definitely the one. But, uh-huh. I mean, I watched a lot of that stuff when I was a kid.
Honeymooners.
Yeah. And then, you know, a further era, but you know, into the 70s. But Sanford and Son is one of the all time greats.
Yep, the Dick Van Dyke Show and the original Lou Hart Show, those hold up in terms of just adulthood. You know, being in a relationship, having neighbor friends, raising a family, and it's so well written, so well acted. And those things, you know, they hold up. And there's some universal truths. Modern Family will always work, even though it obviously had some more modern themes than the Dick Van Dyke era did. There's shows that are just going to resonate with people forever who discover those shows.
Universal theme. You know, that's why stuff like Charlie Chaplin films still work today, because the themes are universal.
Yep. Honeymooners. And it was, you know, we just, you know, there were reruns, and you were a captive audience with very few channels in another era. And it's going to be interesting how some of these things, you know, how much of the availability of so many things with YouTube and on demand leads to a generation missing out on discovering some, I think, timeless classics. But our show is running long and we don't want to get too sidetracked here. appreciate the call, Kyle. I want to now just sneak in a few emails here and then we'll wrap up. Tyler W. says, Wade, what else is there to say? Cody Rhodes is a star. What a promo, what a presence, just outstanding. I wish I had more to say, but sometimes you just have to acknowledge greatness when you see it. So some strong praise there for Cody from Tyler. Zach in Texas said, I'm sticking to my vow to only watch segments involving the greatest and Damage Control, but I got to make one comment about Cody. I don't know who's constructing the storyline, but it feels like they're doing it backwards. From what I read, Cody basically cut the go-home promo tonight. He attempted to bring in Sami Zayn, yet still didn't really tie himself into the overall Bloodline story, especially since he waxed poetic about his own journey more than the Bloodline running roughshod over WWE for 2 years. It would have made much more sense to have Sami, Cody, and KO work together against a Bloodline than building around a man who's been dead for nearly a decade. As far as the women's stuff goes, having a series of backstage segments was fine. More importantly, I continue to be heartened by the lack of Ronda Rousey in the story. Becky and Lita should absolutely go into Mania as the tag team champions. So what do you think about Zach's take on Cody? And this is backwards, and it just should be Sami, Cody, and KO working together because the Bloodline has been running roughshod for so long. These baby faces should have aligned sooner.
The Bloodline is more interesting than just like the way he describes the Bloodline sounds like it's aces and eights in TNA, where it's just the same thing every single week. And I even liked Aces and Eights for a little while there in like 2013. But it just starts to get ridiculous after a while and you're like, oh yeah, it's the same darn thing every single show. The Bloodline is way more interesting than that. And there are different nuances, if not week to week, at least month to month or season to season with the overarching storylines. And you know, we've heard, I guess it's a, you know, the, it's out there that people, don't like the Dusty correlation because he's been dead for a while. I don't get that. It's still, one could argue that it even has more meaning, because of that. I mean, Dusty is one of the most influential people in the entire wrestling world, and I find that part of the storyline extremely effective. And with Cody cutting what Tyler describes as the go-home promo tonight, I mean, sure, it could have been, but now we have to wonder how the Bloodline is going to respond to that, and then how is Cody going to respond to their response to it while presumably he is again face-to-face with Roman next week, and what decision is Cody going to make? How is Cody going to define himself? Is it going to be in line with one of the options the Bloodline has given him, or will Cody come up with his own path?
Yeah, Cody didn't cut tonight's promo because they're out of ideas. He cut it because this was the week that they needed to have him cut this promo so they could tell their story on the next five live episodes of WWE WrestleMania hype. Maybe the last week is more of a recap, and that's fine. But I mean, obviously next Monday, I'm looking forward to it. I'm curious what they come up with. All right.
And I'm not just trying to disagree with Tyler here, but the heyday of my fandom was, my adolescent fandom was late 90s, early 2000s. I loved Trish and Lita. I had posters of them on my wall. I ate them up. I'm over it. Bailey and Becky seem like such bigger stars now than Trish and Lita ever were. And that's like, I understand the times change. They paved, certain parts of the road, all due respect, but they just showed up for no reason and they're just there. It's not interesting at all. I mean, hey, I'm also glad that Ronda's not a part of it, but boy, this has just fallen on its face for me.
And that was disagreeing with Zach, not Tyler. Tyler loved Cody, and Zach was the one who brought them up, just for clarification.
Okay. Well, I'm used to disagreeing with Zach, so.
Yes. Okay. Up next, Jake from New Zealand. What was that Bianca segment tonight? It was a rough watch for me and did little to further the Women's Championship at WrestleMania. Chelsea Green looked lackluster, and the interactions between Bianca and Asuka are just odd, and not in an intriguing way. I've seen Asuka put together much better builds than this, despite English being her second language. I feel her spitting green mist like so many Asian wrestlers have over the years is a negative part of the feud and lazy booking. I'm sure the match will deliver, but am I entitled to feel a little bit let down by the build so far? Yes.
Yes, you are, and because I've ended up making it part of my podcasting identity that I think Chelsea Green's a terrible wrestler, I watched her very, very closely during this match, allowing her the opportunity to prove me wrong, and boy, she did not.
Yes. Another emailer about Bianca Asuka. This is Justin. This Bianca Asuka feud is effing awful. It's been almost 3 months, and we still don't know what's the difference between this Asuka and the Asuka 6 months ago other than face paint or a haircut. It seems like WWE has lost any interesting and engaging idea for Bianca. Maybe it's just time to take the title off her. Your thoughts? Is it time to take the title off her? Is it time to, not hit reset, but give her something, not an obstacle, but a setback that can add a layer to what is, again, I think it's a very one-dimensional presentation of somebody who I think has a much more compelling layered story to tell in the context of WWE.
Yeah, regarding what is to be done with her, 100%, I've been saying for a couple months that whoever it was going to be challenging Bianca is going to win at WrestleMania, and Asuka will.
Yep. This is still Justin. Has this Trish Lita Becky versus Damage Control program had one interesting promo or angle? For all the good I feel Triple H has done, I couldn't care less about anything he's doing with the women or either brand at this time of year. That just shouldn't be the case. Yeah, I mean, I'd say if there's a critique of Paul Levesque's booking so far that stands out, it would be, and I mean, Tony Khan was criticized for this in the earlier years of AEW too, and it doesn't match NXT, in his history there. But in he needs a longer track record. we're way short of him, of us drawing any conclusions, because some of it has to do with there's the pieces that he had to play with, what he inherited, whatever. But he doesn't get an A grade for developing the women's division so far and what he's done. I mean, it's not all bad. I'm not saying that, but this is not, you know, I don't think anybody's going, man, he's doing such a better job than Vince McMahon was.
I would like to think he has a long-term plan with Rhea. That's just the first one that pops to mind because she's been a favorite of his pretty much ever since the first Mae Young Classic. And that's
even
been
that's
very
a bit of an
open.
Accident. Even that's a bit of a, you know, Dominic just happened to strike fire and she was in the group and they had a fun chemistry. More, but and I don't mean this take away from Triple H leaning into it and you know, watering that plant, so to speak, and fertilizing, you know, the growth of that dynamic with Rhea and Dominic. He has, but it wasn't a master plan that he gets credit for.
Sure, and I guess I'm not even considering that part of it. Just, you know, just Rhea herself. I expect we're going to see a lot from her at the top under Triple H. But, yeah, no, you can definitely tell that he's focused on certain things and not as focused on others. And, I mean, I would imagine, you know, sure, two-night WrestleMania and everything. I would imagine that part of the idea behind the Trish and Lita match, which, you know, we're calling it the Trish and Lita match, not even mentioning Bayley and Becky, but part of the impetus behind it is like, hey, we're giving the women another match on the WrestleMania card. It's not just like they already get one per night, but it's not just the title matches. They also get a personal feud. That's historic, right? No, Brie and Stephanie was not at WrestleMania. But yeah, the email asks, has there been one good promo from the entire thing so far?
No.
And I generously rewound the entire thing through my mind. And no, I'm not just trying to be mean or crass or terse or whatever. No, it's been really bad. And Trish and Lita were inserted totally randomly.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, and you know, Trish's strength is not and hasn't been promos. And you know, they gave her the mic tonight, and I mean, it's fine, but she's not going to save things. Lita's strength was not her promos. She wasn't awful, but it's not like you can just drop her in and oh, she's going to save this. And so, but I mean, I'm fine with this being a match. And you know, I think having a beatdown backstage and the babyface is looking, you know, more determined than ever, and Trish recovering from the beatdown. I mean, it just establishes who the heels are and who the faces are. With Bianca and Asuka, I think it's evidence that Bianca has not grown as a character as champion. Her ring entrance is somewhat symptomatic of, I think, the approach to her character. And there's not thought being put into it. I would love to see the type of layering and nuance that's gone into Jimmy Uso's character this past year, and give me 25% of that for Bianca instead of 1%. You know, it's just, you can tell that's not a priority either because they don't have confidence in her or they think she's good as she is, you know, that what she's doing is fine. And I would like to see more. And the Asuka thing for sure is a letdown. I mean, they went to the trouble to, you know, repackage her, so to speak, and they haven't explained what it is. And Justin is right. Okay. Justin, last point. Lately, I've been noticing the main events have been extremely short. What do you think the reasoning for it is? I don't know. You know, I don't know. I don't know if extremely short's a word. I mean, extremely short. There were some matches that were, you know, one-fifth the length of the main event tonight. But, you know, they are not – there was a stretch, was it November, December, where, you know, the average length of Raw matches seemed to be quite long compared to the Vince era. And, you know, we were like, is this just him kind of filling time, you know, before WrestleMania season? And it might have been, or it might have been a philosophical approach that wasn't working in the ratings. But now, yeah, it's definitely they definitely are not, you know, doing marathon matches. They're keeping our attentions, our short attention spans, pleased, I would say.
Yeah, that part of it is definitely true. I do think it's weird that NXT is the one show that has the you can always expect the overrun. The overrun is just a part of the show. It's not, you know, that is odd to me. I wonder if part of what we're noticing lately, or at least what Justin is noticing, is that with a two-night WrestleMania, they're technically building to two premiums at once with all the star-studded people. I mean, the top promoted item on tonight's show was the face-to-face between Brock and Omos, and it went on at the bottom of the first half hour. So, I mean, they're just packing stuff in.
Speaking of which, JB from Detroit says, is anyone really buying Omos manhandling Brock Lesnar? On top of that, the performance from Lesnar looked half-hearted at best to me, and the crowd seemed rather muted and apathetic. Well, we talked to our site correspondent about that and got an assessment of it. It isn't encouraging that Omos trying to, palm face or power over by a throat grab or whatever it was, Lesnar over the top rope was bungled and, you know, took a second attempt, and Lesnar kind of had to leap over the top rope. It's going to be a challenge to have anything passable between those two. But, I mean, all people want to see is Lesnar suplex Omos for a big pop and, you know, F5 him and pin him. And that'll be replayed on Raw the next day if they do that, if that's the finish, if that's the move. Brock taking someone of Omos' size to Suplex City and giving him an F5, and they're going to make that seem like a legendary moment in WWE history. There's not a lot that they have to do. Omos does not have to hit the ropes and do flat back bumps or dives, and they know their lane, and they're going to stay in it. But it was an encouraging interaction tonight, or the physicality between them showed how limited they have to be in what they ask of Omos.
Yeah, it absolutely did, and I was not surprised when they replayed it later that they edited that moment to make it look like Brock went over cleanly. I am in favor of this being a thing. I just not with Brock. Brock is way too big for it. Like, I'm the guy who enjoyed Giant Gonzalez versus Undertaker for the exact same reason that people were chanting Holy S tonight, because someone so huge like Brock was dwarfed by Omos, and that visual is compelling. But Undertaker was very young in his run at that point. He wasn't the legend yet. Brock is a huge legend, and this is so beneath him. I've talked about Braun Strowman being an option, but I was setting Braun aside. I was looking up and down the roster trying to think of who this would work with better, and I landed on Bronson Reed. There are some other people that I thought of. I was like, hey, let's do something with Chad Gable. But honestly, like, I don't even know if Chad Gable is tall enough to make a Hogan slamming Andre moment look even like physically work. So there is, I landed on Bronson Reed, who's shorter than me, but I stood next to him and I feel like he was shorter than me, but I feel like he's tall enough that he would make it work. I'm 6'2". I don't know. I'm trying to picture it, they are trying to make a moment. They are trying to make like this legendary visual that will get replayed ad nauseum. But gosh, just not with Brock. And Brad from Florida, I usually agree with everything he says. I agree with the emailer that it seemed like Brock was kind of half-hearted tonight.
Yep. All right, very good. Well, we'll wrap up there. Tom, is there anything, the email portion, anything else you want to bring up from the show tonight?
Very briefly, speaking of Chad Gable, I thought it was hilarious when Kathy Kelly was trying to update us about Trish, and he walks up and goes, shoosh, enough about her. And then when he finally found Otis, Mansoor was complaining that he was not cosmetically cleared for competition. That was like a, blink and you miss it joke, but I thought that was hilarious. Let's see. Not really worth commenting on the Rhea Stranger Things thing. Cena's voice said that she's the main event of WrestleMania, but they say that about a lot of people. I still expect the tag match to go on last. I'll be as brief as I can. I just felt like I was disappointed with what they did with Austin Theory tonight, and I think that it wasn't enough is evidenced in the fact that we've barely talked about it tonight, when last week it was maybe the biggest talking point on the show. Just for whatever it's worth, I thought that Cena's promo was brilliant because he's saying everything that all of the Theory detractors are saying. And so now Theory is, honestly, win or lose. Theory could win or lose this match and still prove Cena and the Theory detractors wrong. And I just thought that whole Cena thing was really maximizing that moment with the limited build that Cena's schedule is going to allow it. And I even loved that in the end, he gave the crossover rub to Cody. I just thought it was weird that all Cody did was come out and smile and wave. Like, Cody should have then had a match with Theory, or, even if it goes to DQ, done something rather than just come out and smile and wave. But I just wanted to put my voice out there as a proponent of what they have done with Cena and Theory thus far, and I was disappointed that it was just Theory going over Angelo Dawkins tonight, and he'll probably just do the same thing with Montez Ford next week.
Well, I wish the show hadn't run so long so I could yell at you for 10 minutes about your take on John Cena's promo. But fortunately, I Rich Fan and I on the VIP show, everything with Rich and Wade for VIP members earlier today, we'll get a heavy dose of my I dislike the John Cena promo more now than I did when it first happened. And I just don't agree philosophically with all the meta stuff on a wrestling show. Austin Theory's career isn't about whether success should not, in the context of the narrative structure of pro wrestling, be whether he looks the part or people buy him or believe in him. That's for the marketing department off camera or some podcast from people who are not in the company. The John Cena should be coming in. Instead of airing Austin Theory with some, you know, reverse psychology, if I set the bar so low, now fans can't think less of him than I do. So now whatever twisted logic you're trying to use to put this over, Tom. I believe that John Cena walking out there, and it's not like he hasn't done this before, so this is an ongoing criticism, but within the structure of a TV show, what matters is he's U.S. champion, and what should matter is how he won the title and defended the title, and that should be the talking points for Cena. Cena's talking point should be, if you walk around like you own this place, like you're a future star, how about having the confidence to win without the asterisk of how you cheated to win. Stop talking about it's like the Daniel Bryan stuff. Well, we can't have him on the posters. Well, if he wins matches and he wins a title, guess what? He's going to be on your posters, because your posters are not, storyline wise in the narrative structure, they're not the person who looks the part. Within the confines of a wrestling show, the people who are on the poster are the people who win a championship and win number one contendership, not who's deemed most marketable. Keep that BS off of television. That stuff that was being done in 2003 and 2007 by bookers who don't have jobs now, and John Cena was part of that era, and he hasn't – it's still his default go-to mode. And I really, really strongly disagree with bringing. It's like I didn't like MJF talking about star ratings in the middle of a title defense. Because all of a sudden it's like, oh, now I'm thinking about that. MJF's thinking about how are critics going to do this, rather than am I going to retain the title by getting more points, more falls over Bryan Danielson. Don't bring me out of the moment like that. And it is Cena's go-to mode, and it's one of the biggest negatives on my pro and con of John Cena is. This idea that he caters to part of the audience that are Theory critics. And I'm sorry, but if you go to a WWE show and you sit amongst those fans, the majority of them are not thinking about Theory's marketability and is he the right guy for Levesque to go with as a future top star. They're reacting emotionally to the character, the fact that he's a champion, the fact that he's cocky, and the fact that he cheats to win. And Cena didn't hit that stuff. The overriding idea was, who's going to make the decision on whether this guy deserves more of a push or a continued push? And I will never like that promo.
Now, of course, you know, I for the umpteenth time, I don't watch AEW, but I did hear about that moment and I heard your criticism of it. And I if it played the way that I feel it played from what I heard, I feel like MJF was actually conveying the opposite of that, saying that he doesn't care about that kind of thing, but he knows that the people that he wrestles do. So he was being sarcastic about it. It reminded me of when Bayley came out on the first Thunderdome episode and she was playing to the crowd that wasn't there, and you criticized her for it. And I was thinking, Wade, no, she's being sarcastic. She knows they're not there. And she's like that. No, don't you get it? So that's what that reminds me of. But the John Cena thing, I will listen to it another time I'll play the video back with your comments in mind. I feel from my memory of what he said that it does, his language still works within the logic that you want it to work within. Although I do absolutely fall in line with your perspective that we who are so closely analyzing it are the minority. And so we are not the important ones to play to. So I'll leave it there.
I'll add too. There was an interesting edit or exclusion, and it may not mean anything, but it might. They included John Cena saying, "If you win at WrestleMania, or if you lose at WrestleMania, then it's going to cost, it's going to be, you're going to pay a big price, you know, whatever his phrasing was. They left out the part of the Cena promo. Again, Cena writes his own stuff. I mean, he's doing his own thing. You know, that he's just in Cena mode. But they left out of the recap, if you win at WrestleMania, you also lose because the crowd is going to react a certain way the next day. And I know there's a part of the audience that's like, yes, John's talking to me, the Rafter Mania crowd who go into business for ourselves and hijack the show and react in a meta way to whether we like Roman Reigns as a babyface or not. And we like being acknowledged and yay, they're realizing we're here. But the people who edited that video didn't want that in there because it doesn't make any sense. If Austin Theory beats John Cena, getting booed the next day is not losing. He's a heel. He wants to get booed. Beating John Cena will be a huge positive for Theory in every sense, meta or storyline, and they left that out. And that was I've heard people defend it, and I think you have to twist yourself into pretzel logic to make it seem like Theory loses even if he beats John Cena at WrestleMania. My God. So yeah. Anyway, but rewatch it, and I appreciate you saying you'll do that, and I look forward to your feedback and or your pushback.
All right, fair enough. I'll level and say that while I noticed that edit, I noticed that you couldn't not notice that they also left in his final remark, which I glowed about it the way I did, but I was hoping that was one that they would leave out, the final cheap shot whatever it's supposed to mean, whether it's supposed to mean the testicular fortitude or the actual organ. I don't know.
Yeah, that was weird. That was a weird moment, and they did leave it in. And anyway, all right, Tom, it's been a fun adventure. Fun show.
Yes, it has. We barely even touched on the opening segment, which was my favorite part of the show, Edge's dad joke aside. But, you know, and I'm the, you know, routinely a Finn Balor critic, and I thought he was really good in it.
Yes,
so, you know, man, I said it was an intermediate half step of a Raw, but boy, we found our talking points, didn't we?
Yeah, and we got a reference to the Thunderdome screens. They usually don't acknowledge that era.
Yes.
And
yeah.
Edge is like, I mean, Edge saying, I wasted ear
so
of my
derisively.
Life. Yeah, I was like, geez, yeah. I mean, those people, those Thunderdome volunteers, you know, were people too, Edge.
Edge, my daughter was one of them. That was like the most invested in wrestling she's ever been. Oh, until she, I brought her to a show that Wes Lee was on, and now she has a big crush on him.
Oh, fun. Every fan has a different reason. All right. Thanks, Effie, our on-site correspondent. Thanks to our callers and emailers. Thanks to our listeners. Keep spreading the word about the show. If you enjoy this, let other people know through the power of social media that they should subscribe and check us out. And, Tom, as always, appreciate your time. Always fun talking WWE with you.
Thank you. Talk to you later.
Wait, your YouTube channel? If people are about to figure out what they should do next. What should they go do?
You should go to YouTube and subscribe to Wade Keller's channel, and then go to Speedway Video and subscribe there and watch all the recent stuff from the 2023 points season opener from New Smyrna Speedway.
Nicely played.